Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
And now for something completely different.
I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's the Patty Vasquez Show.
Oh, my God.
Swing. Woo-hoo!
The Patty Vasquez Show.
Dad, she's like a cat.
Mom is sitting right there.
Are you ready for this?
Seriously, is it going to be hot or cold tomorrow? Because I need to know how high I have to shake. Let's go.
Chicago's own Patty Vasquez, everybody.
WGN.
Hello. I am live in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, and the cleaning crews have been out. I was driving down Ohio, and there were still cleaning crews cleaning up banners and a lot of posters. I guess I was along one of the routes for the marathon. Every year, I swear, this is the day I feel lazier than I ever. I see all these people running. I look at people's Facebook threads, and everyone's, you know, either at the marathon, cheering people on, handing out water, or they're actually, you know, didn't our very own Kristen Decker run today?
She did, and
she's not a marathoner. She didn't train for it.
Okay, that was the weird thing, is I asked her if she was going to run this year, and she said no.
And she did.
And then she said, I've actually taken a break from running because my knees hurt, my feet hurt. Ooh. I've been doing HIIT stuff instead. And then this morning I was like, what?
You know what they say you should do is if your knees hurt and your feet hurt, you should definitely not train and just run 26 miles. You should just do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool, though. I saw pictures of her. And she had a medal, so she finished.
I think it's her third or fourth.
You run, right? Do you have aspirations to do this marathon ever?
No.
What's your max? What's the most you can run?
I'm still trying to mentally prepare to run a 15K in November.
And how many miles is that?
9.3.
Okay. Do you say 15K because it just sounds like more?
Yeah.
Okay, it's fine. I didn't mean to out you on that. Nine's good. I don't run more than, I would say four. I think four would be the most I could run. I could walk forever. I just can't. I'm not built for 4 miles. Joining me in studio are our friends of the show, John Tatey from the AV Club, senior editor, and we'll talk. We've got so much to talk about. We've got so much coming up. We also have Charles Turk, the co-founder and CEO of Sientia CME, a continuing medical education company, and we've got so much because you both. Here's why I have you both in tonight, because you. Each one of us has read a book by author Rick Perlstein, and that just cracked me up because I've read most of the first one, and the only reason I was reading that was because Charles texted me one night and said he was reading this book, Invisible Bridge, and then you were in, and I was like, have you ever heard of Rick Perlstein? And you said you'd read the middle
one. Nixon Land, yeah, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah, so I was like, well, then we must all get together and we're now waiting for Perlstein.
Yeah, we're waiting to kiss his butt, basically, and I'm fine with that.
Well, he was here a few weeks ago, and Joseph Giannini, who you've also met from Two Italians Deli and Pizzeria, had just this huge amount of food and booze. So now Perlstein thinks that my show is like this huge feast and boozing it up, and he actually, what did he call it, the immovable feast that is the Pretty Late Show?
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie though. I kind of think the same thing, Pat.
Always. Well, fortunately, and there's beer and wine to be had shortly. We will have food from Pronzi's, which is one of my other favorite restaurants. We're looking at one of your other favorites.
High praise.
I have several favorites. I have several favorite friends of the show, and I have several favorite restaurants. We have the Bluegrass, the Knife and Tine, Pronzi's, Two Italians, Deli and Pizzeria.
It's a privileged club.
It is. It's only.
I'm pretty proud to be a member of it.
I max out at four for everything. Four of my favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I just made it in.
I shouldn't tell you who the other two guests are. That, like,
yeah.
You know.
Who's out of the medals? That's what I want to know.
So one of the things that has come up on the show is there are people that stay on a little bit longer than others. And I sent Charles your articles today to make sure that we could all kind of talk about. Because I won't have as much time with you as I usually do to catch up with what you've written for the AV Club.
Well, what do you mean? I'll be here with Rick Perlstein. It'll be like a 1, 2, 3, 4 punch.
I want to know about your mom watching Jane the Virgin. Because that just cracks.
Oh, that was funny.
So let's set up the premise.
Is this the one that you
auditioned for? The mother.
Yeah, that's
which is
right.
Where I am in life now. I'm auditioning to be a woman. She's like a teenager, isn't she? Or a 20-year-old?
Yeah. That's a sitcom plot in itself right there, Patty. You should write that into a script. Getting to the stage where you're trying out for mother roles.
I am trying out for mother roles.
But yeah, my mom watched. Have you seen any of the screeners? You haven't seen any.
I only read half the script because I had gotten the I read the script, so I know the premise of it. That she yes, but tell
and
our
how did
listeners.
You not get cast? You showed up, did half the line.
I was like, what did you mean you are pregnant? And I was doing my mom the whole time, but apparently they're supposed to be Puerto Rican. And I was doing a Mexican accent.
Oh,
it was a big mess.
Jeez. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so we've got this podcast. It's called Mom on Pop at the AV Club, and I watch and read and listen to or whatever things, and my mom will peruse the same things, mostly TV shows we've done so far, and it's interesting to hear her opinion from another generation. She's smart, she's witty, she's a lot of fun, but she occasionally says outrageous things, as all moms do.
I mean,
you have your mom on, Patty,
exactly.
You know how it is. And mm-hmm. So she watched Jane the Virgin, and she was just entirely unimpressed by Jane's virginity. That was really the focus for her. She was just like, who cares? Who cares if she's a virgin? So what? Why does this have to be a big deal? Which certainly is an interesting take. I think kind of an enlightened take, or maybe not.
Well, you know, that's funny you say that, because when I was given the opportunity to do the Oprah Winfrey Network, we had a series,
mm-hmm,
and I
right.
went back and I watched one of her behind the scenes episodes. You know, she had that, like, after, I don't know what it was called. But,
oh, yeah, right.
Right, with the producers and everything.
After the Big O, I think
yeah.
that's what it was called.
I think it was... It's a cigarette and a
Post
cocktail.
Post-O, yeah.
So her producers had brought this topic that it was a woman who was like 28 or 29 years old who was still a virgin. And Oprah said the same thing. Well, why is that a topic on my show? Why mm-hmm. is it a big deal? Same mm-hmm. thing. Like, who cares? And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing where people are like, what do you mean you're still a virgin? There's
right.
like, there's virgin shaming, I think.
Well, virgin shaming, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
How shameful is that in itself? But mom couldn't get past this point, but I think the show is a little more about this sort of modern-day immaculate conception, right? She's
right.
a virgin, but she gets accidentally inseminated. It happens to all of us, right?
So, Charles, the girl is at the gynecologist's office, and she's supposed to be having one thing done, and apparently the gynecologist messes up the paperwork and artificially inseminates her instead.
That sounds a little less than immaculate, but I'll take it.
Well, it's a tidy conception.
Yes, yes, it's tidier than I guess it usually happens to be. Okay, very interesting.
Having been in the stirrups and actually had a doctor say, oops, I didn't mean to do that once to me, so I actually could. I mean, you would hope it wouldn't be that, because that's pretty
sure,
significant.
Yeah.
But for me it was...
You'd cross your fingers that you wouldn't get inseminated accidentally.
Yes, I would hope that would not be the oops. But yes, I remember the doctor popping up from between my knees and goes, you know, I didn't mean to do that. And had given me a test that I was not scheduled to have done.
Oh,
and was still charged for it. I was very upset about that.
Oh,
I think
that's not
your
cool.
mistake is on you.
You didn't
that
even
$28.
Get a chance to study up.
No, I did not.
Did you complain?
I don't like those pop quizzes.
You got a vaginal
yes.
pop
you
quiz.
Did.
I'm sorry.
Wow. And
I know I'm not supposed to say that.
No, it's fine. We're in that territory.
Did people complain that one time?
I would think.
Didn't people complain one time when you were
talking about the
using
vagina?
That word? Yeah,
yeah.
On the air?
Oh, yeah. That's all right.
But we can.
But now we're talking about it clinically, kind of.
That's
hey,
right.
How's it going? Good to see you again. I'm just randomly saying hi to people. I'm like, I am like the dog sometimes in Up, where I'm like, squirrel. But see, I get to say that about myself now. Yes,
yeah,
there were people
right.
that were complaining that I talked about that. But for them, it was that I was giggling about the word, and we were talking about alternative names, like, you know, vajayjay, or, you know, I don't even know what other people say.
I think we're all considering it very responsibly, wouldn't you say?
Yes.
Oh, I think so, too.
Because we're talking about the stirrups and how this TV show sort of centers around this woman getting accidentally impregnated.
We just have to keep saying it. There's no other way to say it.
Anyway, so your mom was not impressed that Jane's a virgin.
No.
And
no.
then not impressed that she accidentally gets pregnant.
Well, she just found that ridiculous. See, she couldn't really get into the, and maybe you can talk to this, Patty. I don't really know. Have you ever been into telenovelas at all?
No. I mean, and the thing is that the telenovelas, there are several reincarnations of them for American television. Like
right.
Ugly Betty was the
right.
same thing. I think Devious Maids, while not based on an original, obviously has that heightened sense of reality.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I've heard
well,
that.
Well, that's exactly it, isn't
right.
it? It's the heightened sense of reality that my mom couldn't quite glom onto.
Right.
Or heightened sense of unreality, even,
exactly.
right?
Yeah.
And she just found this whole idea completely unrealistic. But that someone, this could happen to someone in a medical office. I feel like it could happen.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't you think so?
Like I said, oops.
Yeah, right?
I think from a from a biological standpoint, I suspect that it could happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know how likely it is that that they would have that kind of a mix-up. But I certainly think it's biologically possible. And yes, it does seem like crazier things have happened in the medical setting, you know, the opposite limbs being...
The wrong limb being amputated, things like that.
The wrong, you know, organ, testicle, you know, whatever it is.
Did you see this case, actually, speaking of artificial insemination?
Well, I want to hear what happened to the testicle first. Kind of, we finished that story.
I swear that I have read stories about, you know, again, wrong limbs and I think at least one wrong testicle being taken.
Goodness.
I mean, you know, again, wrong side. If you have two of something, in all likelihood in modern surgery, it's the wrong one has been taken off at some point.
Leading people to then use Sharpies on their bodies to say, not this one.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
That is correct. That is part of the checklist.
Not this one. Not this one. We are in studio with Charles Turk and with AV Club's John Tatey, and we are going to talk to Pronsies next. Not Pronsies, but Luke from how's it going? I'm so excited that you're here. And then Rick Perlstein will be here shortly as well, the author of Nixonland, Invisible Bridge, and Before the Storm, and contributing editor to Baffler. More after this. Ooh. 720 WGN. So much going on. You're staying up late for a Sunday night. It's pretty late. I'm so glad that you found us on 720 WGN. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and I'm live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and it's a full house. And I'm pretty excited because it's kind of like a party. And I want to introduce Luke Cicero from Pronsies because you are one of the first restaurants we really started having on regularly. Hey, Luke, how's it going?
How you doing? Thank you for having me, Patty.
It's been a while. It's been like since the spring.
I think it's been a couple months. Yeah,
yeah, and you were a baby restaurant at the time.
Yeah, we were just blossoming, so... kind of got through the summer, and we're excited to get our first fall, get everything moving towards the holidays, and ready to take everything to what we can do.
Yeah, I love the food that you've brought before. What was the summer like? I know that it was your first summer, right?
Yeah, our first summer.
Are people texting you?
No.
Don't forget to tell her about our specials.
No, I was just making sure it was off.
That's, all right, don't worry.
Our summer was good. Right. You know, we were able to open up the patio. We had we opened up the patio right in time to take advantage of all the patio goers out there for the city. And I know the weather wasn't as perfect as we'd like to for the summer, but you know, for the couple weeks that we had great weather, people came out and enjoyed a great night with us at Pronsies.
Well, the nice thing is that even though it was sort of a temperate summer, you know, people still want to go in and have some good food. So I'm guessing you were still busy inside.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, we still serve food and drinks out on the patio, so you know, people were able to experience everything we had to offer, but still outside in a beautiful setting. So
I thought it was perfect patio weather all summer.
Was it?
I wish I'd known about this patio. I certainly would have eaten there.
We have wine in the studio, by the way. We have Moscato and we have Pinot Noir. John, we have a bartender serving right now. What would you like? Would you like a Moscato, which is a sweet white wine, or would you like Pinot Noir?
Look at you, radio sommelier, Patty Vasquez.
That's all I've got. It's just that's I have sweet and I have Pinot.
I'll have the Pinot, please.
But no food
Thank
tonight?
You.
There's food tonight. That's why we have Luke in studio.
You like Italian food, don't you, Patty?
I do love Italian food. Last time we had you in, Luke, you brought a stuffed Italian beef pizza, and you actually ruined Scott Miller's because he's gluten free,
right.
And he was suffering a little bit afterwards, but he said it was completely worth it.
Yeah, I wish we would have him here again tonight. He did a good job talking up our pizza, and I know he enjoyed it. So
well, I just had a piece of there's a pizza in there I needed to grab a bite. You guys can eat as much as you want. I'm the one that has to keep driving this boat, but. Marty's like, can I interest you in a red wine or can I interest you in a white wine? You brought a vegetable pizza with I think it's basil, tomato.
It's arugula, ground sausage, and fresh tomato. That's our sausage arugula.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of our signature pizzas. We specialize in Chicago originals. We do the pan, the stuffed, but our claim to fame is our signature thin crust, Chicago style thin crust pizza, cut in squares. We have a few signature items, our quattro formaggi, our sausage arugula. Those are our signature pizzas that are really going well. So That's our claim to fame right now is our thin crust pizza. And
can I ask?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You
Patty.
Go, John.
Can I ask about the squares? Because this has been a thing for me since I got to Chicago
last year. The East Coasters,
year.
They can't stand
have
the squares.
Have we talked about this before?
I believe you and Craig have talked about this. He's from New Jersey and he can't take it.
So I'm glad to hear it from someone behind the scenes now.
Explain
I
want to
know,
him.
Explain the squares
don't
and
roll
what is
away.
The logic? But they don't.
You know, I really couldn't tell you. Just growing up in the city, that's what we're accustomed to. I really can't tell you why it's cut in squares. That's what I prefer. I'm sure.
Why do you prefer it?
What's that?
Why do Chicago? You? I mean, that.
You know, sometimes you don't want the crust. You want you just want the whole okay. middle pizza and you know.
You don't always need a handle, John.
Is. Yeah, you don't
makes
need.
Now, where's this place located?
We're located at 434 West Ontario, so we're kind of tucked just a little bit away from your kind of, you know, hustle and bustle of the River North community. But, you know, the River North community is really growing right now. It's a great residential area to live in. And we're kind of surrounded by all the residential units
And so easy to get to because you're right off the Kennedy. You just
correct.
Jump right over to Ontario.
Right off the expressway, you take a left. We're right down the street. Really quiet place. We want to be a nice neighborhood place. Everybody who lives in Chicago or, you know, you're just moving to Chicago, you want a nice neighborhood place. We're really similar to a place, you know, you'd find at Taylor Street, but we have the same neighborhood vibe and friendly environment that you can find.
With an elegance, though. That's what I love about it. There's an elegance in the way, even the way you present the food. And now this is the one we had last time. This is that stuffed Italian.
Yes, that was our, we call it the double D. It's two. So we had
a
little nice,
naughty.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
So it's two layers of crust. That's why we call it double D. Two layers of dough, stuffed with beef, mozzarella cheese and jardinera peppers. So it's like a beef sandwich, your Chicago style beef sandwich that you're used to, but packed in a pizza.
Now remind me again, is this the one that that led the gluten tolerant individuals?
Yes. Yes.
To transcend his vows and
Yes.
Yeah, we spoiled him and you know,
he could not stop going on and on about the way that tastes.
This
like
pizza is that good.
It's
the
that
gluten
good.
Gluten intolerant will eat it.
Scott Miller was in here going, it's like you took the Italian beef sandwich, you dragged it through the garden, you put it on a double crust and it was amazing and he couldn't stop eating it.
Now you haven't gone with the gluten free crust by request yet?
We do offer gluten free crust.
Right.
So we are gluten friendly. We have plenty of gluten free items. We have a gluten free pasta. We have a gluten free crust. So you can create your own pizza with gluten free option or your own pasta, whatever you'd like.
And a lot of vegetarian options too.
A lot of vegetarian options.
Their artichoke dishes are amazing.
Yeah, we make everything fresh to order. We use fresh ingredients. So you know, you have a certain diet or a certain dietary plan you're trying to follow, we can make a custom and change it for you. So
if someone wants it cut into triangles, could you do that too?
Yes.
We do pie cut. Yeah, we will pie cut for you. So.
Yeah. The double D's in a pie cut, so that comes in triangles.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
Yeah, it does. And you're at 434 Ontario?
434 West Ontario, correct, just west of Orleans.
And PronziChicago.com for the menu and all the pictures of your lovely establishment. Oh, look at that pizza.
I'm looking at it, man.
Isn't that great? I want to thank you again. It's been such a long time, and let's not make it such a long time till we see each other again.
Absolutely. Love to be a friendly neighbor here.
You're definitely a friend of the show, Luke.
With Patty Vasquez.
Appreciate it. We're back after this. It's pretty late, 720 WGN. Thank you so much for staying up pretty late with us. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and I'm live in the Allstate Showcase studio with our guest that I introduced you to the last half hour. We have Charles Turk, CEO and co-founder of Sancha CME, continuing medical education company. We also have the senior editor of the AV Club, John Tatey, also friend of the show, and new friend of the show, author Rick Perlstein, who has written The Invisible Bridge. It's a bridge to nowhere. It's all those things.
Don't tell my mother that.
And actually, I'm still in the middle of Before the Storm because I have so many things that I have to get done. But each one of us has read one of your books, and that amused me. And I thought, well, we have to have Rick Perlstein back. And you have an event tomorrow.
I do, yeah. There's a magazine called The Baffler that's been around for about 25 years, and it's a kind of cultural criticism magazine. They call it the magazine that blunts the cutting edge.
Blunts the guy.
It's a bunch of left-wing smartasses the founding editor is Tom Frank, who wrote the famous book What's the Matter with Kansas? And it's been revived in the last few years. And the editor is a guy named John Summers, who runs it out of Boston. And we have a new anthology called No Future for You.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact,
did you nab a copy?
I did get a copy of it myself.
And we're doing a reading tomorrow at the Seminary Co-op Bookstore on Woodlawn and 57th Street in Hyde Park. And come on down. It's going to be a hootenanny.
And that's your alma mater, correct?
It is indeed.
University of Chicago. Yes. Fancy. Very fancy.
Yes.
And where are you from originally, Rick?
I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
How hard was it to come to Chicago being a Wisconsinite?
Well, I was from the suburbs.
So you were still from Wisconsin.
I saw a sidewalk and I never looked back.
You thought people can walk places?
Right, exactly.
And not be fearing for their lives by
right.
traffic? Nice.
It was very exciting coming to Chicago when I was a 18-year-old in 1988, and I'm very proud to be from Wisconsin. And, I kind of have been boycotting football lately. But I was a fan of that other team for a while.
Of the Packers?
Yeah.
That's okay. You can say it.
And,
you're allowed. Genetically, you have to like the Packers, don't you?
You know, all my parents' friends, kind of moved to Florida or Arizona, so I don't really have any reason to go anymore. Although, I know we have some listeners in Milwaukee.
Absolutely.
Right? And I'll be there on November 3rd, I think. November 4th. Sometime in the first week of November.
If we could have your travel calendar, that would be helpful to everybody.
It's going to be at the UWM Library, and it's sponsored by Boswell's Books, so I'm sure they have it on their website.
Boswell Books
mm-hmm.
for the website. And when you do watch football, though, because John Tatey has been writing some, it's called Block
that.
And Tackle, right? Are the pieces that you write?
It is on the AV Club, yeah.
Yeah.
So we should chat about this thing that he boycotts that I write about?
No. No, because I think this is actually, because culturally, the pinking of the NFL, I think, is kind of a fascinating.
The pinking of the NFL?
Well, because they do the breast cancer awareness.
Right. I understand.
Campaign.
So there's a pink fracking drill bit, too.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that on your Facebook page. That's very forward. Thinking of them, if we just destroy
that's
the environment,
well, it causes the chemicals they use do cause cancer, including breast cancer. But if we make a pink drill bit, maybe we can. I don't know.
Well, they're giving it lip service. That's good. They're raising awareness, which was.
Well, they just did. We just talked about cancer causing properties of fracking, so I guess they did their job.
Exactly. Right. Now we're all aware of it.
All you need to do is raise awareness of something. It doesn't even need to be breast cancer.
No.
Just raise awareness.
That's right. Well, people ask, why do people, have so much attention paid to breast cancer awareness when there are so many different cancers going on? And I really think it's because it was marketed so brilliantly. You have that girl
was
power
it brilliant?
Thing.
Brilliant? I just feel like it was the most capitalistically palatable marketing angle they could have chosen.
Which makes it brilliant.
Boob
marketing.
Jokes.
Exactly. Well, hey, I had shirts that said save the boobies, but that was back in 2002 I had shirt because
it was cool.
Right. And then it was save second base.
You were into breast cancer before breast cancer.
So ahead of the game. I'm so into breast cancer. Well, because my point, I was in Cleveland, Ohio at the Improv in 1999.
Give some the prostate cancer, I say.
Well, I want to do one for men that has a squirrel holding acorns that says save the nuts, something like that. I've always
heard
it. I'm saying. I'm like this with jokes.
$1 million ideas right there.
But there was, for me, the reason I was doing it was because, there's this attraction that men have, obviously, for breasts, and yet women's health lags behind, because the pap smear, which we talked about the stirrups the last half hour, that's been around since 1927. How have we not progressed? How do we not have an app for the pap yet? Is all I'm saying. So that was my point of drawing awareness to breast cancer.
There's a new book on the history of the pill.
There is.
And it was reviewed in the New York Times this week. And one of the points that people have been making is this is 50-year-old technology. And, why haven't we progressed past that?
Exactly. I think that if we tested for testicular cancer the same way we did mammograms, maybe men would understand women's health a little bit better. Wow,
well,
nobody...
and if men could get pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament.
There you go. There you go. And, right, and how's the pasta?
Patty, I've never enjoyed myself so much on a show of yours before. This is fantastic.
alive. We're talking about women's health. We're having pumpkin pasta. Yes.
Oh, yeah, it is pumpkin. It's pumpkin ravioli. And
oh, no, I got to eat more.
This is fantastic.
There's a lot going on. Oh. Well, Rick, when we I run over the word abortion because it does sort of – people get so in their corners about that word, right?
Yes.
And like, as a comedian, you know, I remember I saw a woman. She did a joke. What did she say? This other comedian said, pro-lifers make me so angry. They make me want to get pregnant just so I can have an abortion. And
that's not a very sensitive joke.
It's not a very sensitive joke at all. But I mean, like, that's a joke that like is so dark and so angry. But that's where people are coming from, because it shows how aggressive pro-lifers are and how angry.
I write about the beginning of that history in my book Invisible Bridge, right? Mm-hmm. In 1973, when Roe versus Wade passed, and it started entering the political arena, and it terrified people that political issue, because people could get right away that this was an issue that would be like the religious wars of the 17th century in Europe. That there was this no compromise between people who believed abortion was the key to women leading fulfilled, free lives, and people who believed that it was murder.
Right.
There's really no twain between those can meet. And people were terrified that this was going to divide our politics, and that turned out to be prophetic.
Absolutely, because it's the kind of thing that shouldn't be at the center of politics, the same way gay marriage, we're now learning. You know, even the Supreme Court goes, you know what? No, we're not. We're done.
Well, that was the argument a lot of people made at the time. One of the arguments people made was, it's interesting, at the time, really, it was the Catholic Church that led the opposition to abortion. Evangelicals, in fact, the Southern Baptist Convention, you know, the very conservative Southern Baptists, only started resolving at their conventions against abortion very late in the game, like 3 years after that. And people said, well, if this enters politics, this is like kind of Catholics kind of forcing their religion on everyone else.
Right. Because,
which is one of the issues, too.
Which is because there was a fear of Catholicism.
Taken over. Yeah.
Right. Because that was already a problem for them when Kennedy had run.
Exactly. Exactly. Actually, there's a really good new book. I've mentioned five of them already. You can tell I went to the University of Chicago. But Kath Apollett, the Nation columnist, just came out with a book called Pro, P-R-O. Mm-hmm. And the point of the book is, people who are pro-choice should not just be saying that abortion is terrible, but it should be safe, legal, and rare, which is what Bill Clinton, of course, said, but that we should actually celebrate abortion as something that is a social good, that it actually advances society. And it's time for women and men who are pro-choice to actually embrace abortion as something that you shouldn't be ashamed of, something that makes people's lives better and freer.
Well, I thought Herman Cain made an interesting statement during his run for the primary when he was running for president. He said that he was pro-life and pro-choice, that he was against women having abortions, but he would not take their right away. Do you remember when he said that?
If that was the position in the Republican Party, sign me up. That sounds great.
I thought that was a really interesting way to put it. I mean, I think that's true for a lot of people who believe in the right to choose. They don't want women to make that choice. They don't want to do it
If you don't like abortion, don't have one.
Right, exactly. And they don't want people to do it cavalierly to treat it like it's birth control.
But does anyone really do that, you think?
Well, but that's the accusation, isn't it?
Right.
If I made a mistake.
Actually, the majority of people who have had abortions always, since time immemorial, are married women who often have children and don't want more children. So it's not just these wanton sluts, you know, kind of hopping from bed to bed and saying, well, this is consequence-free sex. It's people within loving, committed relationships most of the time.
Right.
I'll tell you what it reminds me of, Rick, and you you focus on this at the very least.
And please keep talking because I want a bite of food. Go ahead.
Oh, by all means, yes. And you focus on this at least in part in the Invisible Bridge, but it's Patty, you just interrupted my thought.
You can pass it on.
Her moan of pleasure interrupted your thought.
Goodness, no. I mean, no. The announcement that I was supposed to keep talking, which completely befuddled me, and now I have got nothing to say.
You know what? You can remember, because we're taking a quick break. We're hanging out with author Rick Perlstein, the author of Invisible Bridge. He has an event tomorrow for the No Future From You, Salvos from the Baffler at Seminary Co-op tomorrow. What time is that again?
Six.
At six. Oh, so it's not in the afternoon. It's in the
late afternoon.
Late afternoon. Let's go with that.
After work.
Depends on how much Moscato we have today. And I'm also joined by the AV Club senior editor, John Tatey, and the I'm so sorry, Charles. I should not have interrupted you.
And you're joined by half my brain.
It's the food. It's the food.
Yes.
CEO and co-founder of Sanchez CME. Right back after this, 720 WGN. What are you doing up pretty late? Well, you found us on 720 WGN. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. I'm live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and I'm joined by Charles Turk, John Tatey, and author Rick Perlstein. We've been talking about his several books and just your wide range of knowledge on all things political. And you have a take that I've been watching some of your posts on Facebook that some people take to task in their reviews. But, you know, everyone's got their way of style of writing that's going to rub some people the wrong way.
Right.
And you seem to have done that, I think, the right way and the wrong way for some.
Well, I my book on Ronald Reagan actually treats this sacred figure, warts and all. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk about the good stuff. I talk about the bad stuff. And to a lot of Americans, he's just this kind of God.
Right.
He's, you know, larger than life. And one of the points I make in the book is he's always been this very divisive figure. Even when he was in high school, you know, he was kind of dividing, you know, kind of people in his high school between people who thought he was this great guy who was gonna, you know, do great things and was kind of, they'd follow him into a fire, and then there were people who thought he was this big fat phony, which is exactly
really?
Kind of the division now. Mm. So it's not enough to say, well, people are divided about Ronald Reagan. These guys want people to basically worship Ronald Reagan.
Well, what's interesting to me, and oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Well, I hate to cut you off again.
Well, in that case, I'll cut you off.
Okay.
And jump
oh,
right
this
in
is fantastic.
Here,
so,
all right, I'm gonna save mine.
Fist
the
cuffs
in the lockbox.
Look at the, they all want a piece of Rick.
Guess what? I've just forgotten my idea.
No, right, you have not.
He's just kidding.
No. Yeah, no, I am. But no, I really have forgotten my
idea. Oh, okay, John.
All right, here we go.
What was interesting to me
you?
About what Patty asked about is that, first of all, anybody who read Nixon Lander should not have been surprised by this, because Reagan was a character, and I think that your treatment of him was not that surprising, I guess, if you've read Nixon Land. Reagan was set up in that book. I feel you could see him waiting in the wings.
And in Before the Storm.
Right. Which I have not read, but Patty has
read
most
of. We're all out of order on this, aren't
we? So, yeah. But I guess what's interesting to me is Nixon, I feel like because he resigned, there, like, it seems like modern Republican thought is like, well, he doesn't really count.
Right.
Like, that's just he.
Well, one of the reasons Republicans need this hero figure of Ronald Reagan is, you know, who else do they got, right? You know, it's like they hate Eisenhower because he was too liberal. You know, Nixon was, you know, Nixon. Gerald Ford was this kind of mediocrity, yeah. Right? And George Bush was whiny and he raised taxes. And the next George Bush, you know, just, you know, failed left and right. Or mostly right. And so, you know, they can kind of put this one guy on a pedestal, right? And they don't want to kind of even look at what he actually did, which was when he was a governor in California, he raised taxes several times. He signed the most liberal abortion law in the country. You know, when he was president, he signed a law that actually gave illegal immigrants in the country amnesty, let them stay in the country. But they kind of forget all that.
Well, not just forget, but seem to reinterpret and reimagine it.
Yes, they reimagine it, right?
Right. I don't, how does that even, I mean, because what we remember are the trickle-down economics. Was that him or was that Bush?
That was him.
That was him. And was voodoo, him. It was voodoo economics. And
Bush
it was,
coined the term, but
yes.
He was
yeah.
describing Reagan's
right.
policies.
Right, when he ran against him for president in 1980. And then when he got beaten by Reagan and chosen as Reagan's running mate, he somehow managed to forget that he'd ever
right.
said that. And, of course, the thing about Ronald Reagan is he was, you know, there was an economic recovery during his term, but kind of the reason there was an economic recovery was because Jimmy Carter chose this Federal Reserve chair. His name is Paul Volcker. He's still kind of active in politics, who kind of chose to kind of induce a recession to break the back of inflation. And it didn't work for 3 or 4 years, but it worked really well, and there was an economic recovery. But by the time it worked, Ronald Reagan was president, and he took the credit.
Right.
Even though he, you know, reappointed this guy, Paul Volcker. So, you know, there's a lot of mythology, you know, but, you know, politics is partly about, you know, the game of creating a convincing mythology.
Well, and I was reading your essay in No Future for You, and that you a few years ago.
That's a mean one.
A little bit. Well, to your point about creating this mythology and what Mitt Romney was up to in what he was trying to accomplish in 2012, sort of reimagining himself and
right.
even his own policies.
Yes.
But you said that you signed up for all of these right wing publications.
Right.
And people, you know, I try to listen to both sides. I'll watch Fox and I'll watch you know, Rachel Maddow. I try to get a little bit of everything. thing. I find everybody to be a little too polarizing for me.
Right, sure.
And I shut it all down, and I listen to WGN. But do you when you listen to that, I mean, when you like, I was just pulling up something on Sander Flukey, right, who had been on Rush Limbaugh, gone
at
Fluk.
Here's how she pronounces her last name.
Is it Fluk?
Yeah, isn't that weird?
It is. We've all
rhymes
come
with
to...
the thing that Rush Limbaugh thinks she does a lot because she takes the.
Do not say it.
Don't say right. No,
don't
no, no.
Say it.
No,
I've
got
the
a dump button.
Rule.
Say what?
I know where the dump button is. But she, you know, she became sort of the symbol for both sides. You know, whether it was the conservatives saying that look, they want this birth control, they want it for free, so they can have as much sex as they want, not really understanding birth control.
Right.
And you know, now she's running for office.
Is she?
Yes, she is.
Where?
It says that she's. I just saw this today, so I thought it'd be interesting to bring up because when he was talking about her and she testified in front of Congress about, you know, the need to protect birth control as a right under health care, you know, it makes her a prostitute. She wants to be paid to have sex. And they did a really – he did such an astounding job of demonizing not
right.
just her but birth control and
right.
reproductive rights.
Birth control, which is a way in which kind of the center in American politics just moves further and further to the right. It used to be that, you know, you could say, well – you know, of course, I think abortion should be, you know, as rare as possible, and that kind of plays you in the center. Now the center seems to be, I'm against abortion, but I think birth control is okay.
Right.
Right. So, like, you know, who knows what's going to happen 5 or 10 years from now? And, you know, the fact is this woman, Sandra Fluk, I think she might have what it takes to be a very good public servant because she proved herself to have enormous grace under pressure.
She's running
for... I mean, to be attacked by that like that,
yeah.
to retain your composure
absolutely.
Is quite remarkable. Yeah.
She's running the California State Senate seat in the hotly contested West Los Angeles election for this.
I'll be darned.
There you go. We're going to take a quick break here. We are talking to author Rick Perlstein, who has an event tomorrow at the Seminary Co-op for the Bafflers anthology No Future for You. That's at 6 p.m. And we're also joined by the AV Club Senior Editor John Tatey and Sanchez CME CEO and co-founder Charles Turk. Right back after this, 720 WGN. Getting jiggy with it. Getting jiggy with it. Getting jiggy with it. You're listening pretty late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we're having part political discussion, part book salon, part wonderful feast of beverages and delicious food from Pronzi's. Once again, thank you to Luke Cicero for bringing us some pumpkin ravioli and a sausage rigatoni, or I don't
with
even...
With a balsamic reduction.
Oh, that was on the pizza. Wasn't
yeah.
that great?
Mm.
Oh, and our poor producer, Caitlin Fry, she's like, I've got to start telling people that I'm a vegetarian. Half of that pizza is vegetarian. Did you get some of that?
There might not be much pumpkin ravioli left.
It's really good.
It is good.
Also being enjoyed by everyone. We have so many people in the studio. Nasmerelda Leon's down here. Charles Turk, who is a CEO and co-founder of Sanchez CME, a continuing medical education company. You can go to sanchezcme.org for more information. We'll talk to him about that a little bit later. The senior editor of the AV Club's, John Tatey. And you've got so many great articles. I really just adore the way you write. Whether it's short form or long form, you know.
Well, I adore the way Rick writes.
Well,
I want to pass it along to him since we rarely get to have him. Can I ask a question about his about the No Future for You essay you've got in there? And
mm-hmm. yes. I mean, the long con.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's interesting to me is that you do what seems to me to be a very natural thing is you follow the money, basically.
Right.
You signed up for all these right-wing publications and then just saw what was being sold to these audience, to these
right.
lists.
Which
right?
is like the miracle cancer cure for 39 cents that the liberals and the government won't tell you about.
Right. Well, that's the thing that keeps they won't tell you about, right? And it's interesting to me because you start the piece out talking about Mitt Romney's fabulous lies. I mean, I found Mitt Romney so entertaining in the campaign because he sort of made lies into performance art and all the different ways he found a lie, as you laid out. But what's interesting to me is that almost enhances the brand of this, right?
It kind of, well, for one thing, it kind of convinces kind of the conservative leadership that he's kind of got the stones, you know, to kind of brazen out what it takes to kind of hustle the public.
Right.
Right. So it kind of increased their credibility with him because people are like, is he really a conservative? Is he really kind of one of us? And by kind of, you know, just completely turning his back on everything that he had said before, you know, the fact that he, you know, passed this healthcare law, Romney Care, which was identical to Obamacare,
right.
and then attacking, you know, Obamacare and, you know, many, many lesser examples of that. But then for kind of like the grassroots you know, kind of fleecing the rubes is just kind of become a big part of the conservative business model. And if you don't believe me, just, you know, go on, you know, go on a website like Newsmax.com, which is, you know, like a very, very highly trafficked website, and look at the ads. And it's all just kind of like snake oil salesmen. And they're treating these people who are trusting them with their kind of civic trust like they're a bunch of marks. You know, well, they're con men looking for marks.
Well, when you mention, like, the government won't tell you, that sounds like that guy Kevin Trudeau who was selling, like, who actually was indicted and in prison for selling these ideas that, you know, this is what no one's telling you about on how to cure cancer, like
you're
saying.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, if you look at, say, the Republican Party in a place like Michigan, the DeVos family, right, they basically run the Republican Party in Michigan and spend millions and millions of dollars, and they're the founders of a company called Amway. And Amway's business model is has been, you know, some people think it's a pyramid scheme, you know. And basically the business model is...
They can hear us in Grand Rapids.
The business model is basically you don't sell stuff. You basically recruit other people to sell stuff. And they recruit other people to sell stuff. And they recruit other people to sell stuff. And 90% of the ordinary Americans who sign up for this actually lose money. And they really find lots of eager people to sign up because the Republicans and the conservatives convince people the only people that are worthwhile in society are entrepreneurs. So they say, we can make you an entrepreneur and you can become rich like I've become rich, and no one gets rich. They're not a sponsor, are they?
No, I don't think so. Is that Amlings? No,
Amway.
It's Amway.
Which is short for the American
Amlings, yeah.
Which is short for the American way, and they kind of see that as the American way.
Well, the other perfect part of it to me is that how the lying basically diminishes public trust in these public institutions, and that just plays right back into what they're not telling you. Right?
The Republicans, you know, are the people who rob the postman, and then they complain when the mail doesn't get delivered.
Right.
Charles, did you have?
Yeah, I should point out that's the that's actually the thesis of Tom Frank's other book, The Wrecking Ball.
Right, The Wrecking Crew.
The Wrecking Crew. Thank you. Yes, it's The Wrecking Crew. So they come in having denounced government, and I should point out that you know, there people do have a point. Oftentimes, there usually is a kernel of truth, and then it will be harped upon and you know, and exaggerated. And so folks come in and you know, having harped against the government,
right?
And then proceed to essentially wreck it from within by appointing cronies.
Right.
Or
do you remember when Bobby Jindal went on TV after Barack Obama's speech?
Very presidential.
In 2009,
he came out
and he said he came out after Barack Obama's speech selling a stimulus plan, gave the Republican response, and he says, "There's just so much wasteful government spending. The government is spending money on volcano monitoring." And I'm just like, wow, maybe someone should be monitoring the volcanoes. You know, maybe that's not a terrible idea. That was his example of wasteful government spending.
Well, the one that was a lot more amusing, I think, was what Reagan came out against the studying of, what, bisexual toads over in some other country or something like that.
Right, that was all made up. Right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but they weren't, you know, like there was no government money being spent on this and all this sort. No, he said also, one of my examples in the book is, he said that, the government had held up the approval of a drug that could cure tuberculosis. And that, so there's like 20 million people suffering from tuberculosis. And people came out and said, wait a sec, there's like, you know, 5 million people who have tuberculosis, and the government approved the drug.
So I have a question for you. So, and that is that, you know, would do you think that in this age of Google, you know, and the interwebs, as they call them, or so I hear, would Reagan have made it, being able to be fact-checked?
Well, George Bush did a pretty good job of selling us the idea that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and got us into a war, and last I saw, we had the interwebs in 2003. So, you know, no one ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people, I'm afraid. But it's true that Reagan kind of kept it going kind of fast and furious, and it was hard for people to check stuff back then. And now we have better tools for informed citizenship, whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Democrat, whether you're a liberal or you're a conservative. You know, we shouldn't be trusting our politicians. That's what the founding fathers told us, right? If angels were to govern men, no laws would be necessary. I don't see any angels around governing men, you know?
Now, one of the things that you've also been posting about is Norman Mailer and Gore Vidal having. Now, who were they on with the Cavett? Who's show was
Dick Cavett. Yeah,
this is the best clip.
Yeah, we should have the audio.
Yeah, you know what? I'll see if Caitlin can get the audio for Norman Mailer and
That's on YouTube. Norman Mailer and Gore Vidal on Dick Cavett.
Mm-hmm,
that's
Dick Cavett.
Definitely on YouTube, and you can pull it up. But basically, the funny thing about that is, they used to have like novelists going on talk shows on TV.
And now they have them on a radio show.
And Gore Vidal and Norman Mailer, these guys who wrote these like 600, 700 page novels, go on TV, and they almost get into a fist fight.
Right.
They made fun of it on SCTV.
that's how high profile it was.
Yeah.
Yes. Which
did you happen to see the clip between Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley?
Oh, that was from 1968. Yeah. William F. Buckley was the conservative editor of National Review, and Gore Vidal was this very left wing novelist, and they were hired by CBS to be commentators at the 1968 convention, and Gore Vidal called Buckley a fascist. So Gore Vidal came back. Gore Vidal called Buckley a fascist. Buckley came back and called Gore Vidal queer or a pansy or something like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah. And it just kind of went on and on and on.
And thus the model was set for televised debate for the rest of the 60 years.
And instead of kind of following the example of the demure and intelligent and calm witty Dick Cavett, I think it was kind of the idea that we can get people to have fistfights on television. And next thing it's Jerry Springer all the time. They didn't even need Gore Vidal.
Now you have to have bouncers for talk shows. It's ridiculous. We're talking to author Rick Perlstein. He's written Invisible Bridge and also has an anthology coming out tomorrow with The Baffler, for which he is a contributing editor. And we have John Tatey, who's leaving us. It's time for you to go.
Just for now.
Right. We'll see you on Friday to catch up with you on what's going on with the AV Club. Senior editor. It's just fun to say senior editor.
It is fun, yeah.
I'm going to need you to wear your We Fit shirt next time you come in.
Oh, okay.
He looks
with
pretty young to me.
With my senior editor sash.
Yes, exactly. top blogger in the United States?
Oh, Lord.
Time Magazine's top 25 blogging. Yes.
Really? Are we still doing that?
I forgot for a while.
We used to say in Brooklyn, that and a nickel will get you on the subway.
Exactly.
See, you always think I'm doing it in a mocking way.
I don't think, but I am hearing it in a mocking way.
I know.
You
should never hear it from me in a mocking way. We also are joined by Charles Turk, the CEO and co-founder of Sanchez CME. More with these gentlemen when we come back on 720 WGN.
Self, like the phoenix, and what the next incarnation will be, I don't know.
Well, you seem to have me figured out as the next reincarnation for me is going to be Charles Manson.
Well, you let yourself...
Why don't you read what you wrote?
You let yourself in for it, and I will tell you, I'll give a little background here, that Mailer has...
We all know that I stabbed my wife many years ago. We do know that, Gore. You were playing on that. Now, come on.
Oh, I'd love to forget about it. Listen,
well, no, you don't want to forget about it. You're a liar and a hypocrite. You were playing on it.
But that wasn't playing a liar or a hypocrite. I wasn't going to talk about it.
The fact of the matter is that people who read the New York Review of Books know perfectly well. They know all about it. And it's your subtle little way of doing it. You know, the New Yorker ones.
Oh, I'm beginning to see what bothers you now. Okay, I'm getting the point.
Are you ready to apologize?
I would apologize if it hurts your feelings. Of course I would.
No, it hurts my sense of intellectual pollution.
Well, I must say, as an expert, you should know about that.
I would like to... Yes, well, I've had to smell your works from time to time, and that has helped me to become an expert on intellectual pollution, yes.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I was not going to...
Men insult each other, not only in public, but you act as if you were in private. That's the odd way.
It's the art of television, isn't it?
It's very odd that you act as if you were the only people here.
Aren't we?
They are here. He's here. I'm here. And I'm becoming
and we're here.
Very bored.
Did I cut her off? Was that a her or he? I don't even know who that was.
That was an old lady. Yeah. So I think it was like 1980 or something like that.
Oh, man. That was Dick Cavett. So that's Gore Vidal and Norman Mailer on Dick Cavett's show. Now, had you been posting this because of the appearance that Ben Affleck made on Bill Maher's show?
I would say Bill Maher's show is the closest thing to what we have like that. But that was on network television.
That was network. Yeah. Yeah.
And
don't forget that you stabbed him.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting on two levels. Because one, you have these very distinguished novelists, these real intellectuals, these guys guys who are, you know, writing difficult works and showing up on TV. But the other thing is, you know, the way they go after each other, it's like, you know, you can see Jerry Springer just coming right around the corner, right? Some you know, like basically, like, you know, Dick Cavett is like, this is really embarrassing, and some producer is sitting there and saying, hey, I could sell this.
This is amazing.
This is great television.
Although I don't think anyone says intellectual pollution on Jerry Springer's show.
No, I don't think so.
You know what's interesting about these guys, and also William F. Buckley, is that they have almost like the cadence of Brits. You know,
yeah, yes. It's so funny. No one talks like that.
Nobody talks like this. I mean, they have American accents, but they speak almost in almost a British pace.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, we kind of have a much more kind of populist culture. You know, it's like, here I am, this writer. I write 800 page books.
I know.
Try and get people to think, you know, kind of big thoughts, but it never occurred to me that I should change my voice so I should be taken more seriously, you know?
Well, I mean, because William F. Buckley, who was from, where was he from originally?
He was from Connecticut, but his father was from Texas.
I knew there was a Texas connection there, because their money was in oil.
Their money was in oil, but the idea was kind of like this, he was very important in kind of giving people the sense that conservatives were not a bunch of yahoos, that you could be an intelligent, refined person and still be a conservative. And then he died, and they basically, the yahoos just kind of came out of the woodwork.
Well, because he, at the time, in the 1950s, the you know, conservative students weren't that much of an organized
group. No, not at all. Yeah. And he kind of organized them.
Yeah.
Right. You were a history major, Patty.
I'm reading your book. Oh. I'm reading Before the Storm. Yes, and I have a degree in history. I went to the University of Illinois. You and I did a similar thing where we decided nay to grad
to
school.
Academia, yeah.
Yeah. I tried. I went to Northwestern, and I had a choice between U of C and Northwestern. And Princeton, but I'm not saying anything about that.
Oh, my God. You tell dirty jokes on stage.
Exactly. No, but I was just miserable. I mean, I was there for about two quarters. And
University of Chicago?
No, I was at Northwestern.
Oh, okay.
The thing was, it was that for U of C, the problem for me was the police blotter on the back page.
Yeah,
of the.
Yeah. It's better now.
Is it better now?
There's a cop on every corner.
Is there really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because it was really getting out of hand. There were a lot of break-ins. I mean, you know, whether it was through back porch windows, and there were sexual assaults on campus.
That's a reasonable concern.
And the thing about U of C that also, I aspired to be a TA, and because the grad student population is very nearly the same size as the undergrad population, there aren't that many opportunities to be a TA there. That's why I also did not want to go there.
Well, maybe some of the crimes were committed by TAs against
other
TAs.
They might have been. They broke. Now, why did you decide? I mean, was it because I had friends that were ABD like for 9 years.
Why did I decide not to go into academia? Because I love reaching a broader public, you know?
That makes sense.
Yeah. I feel, you know, as George will tell you, my books are written in a way that are meant to both edify but also to entertain.
They're more accessible than if you're just writing it for like for your tenure or to prove something. You're doing.
I used to love writing for the Village Voice when I lived in New York, and the reason was it was free, and I loved the idea that someone could leave the paper on a subway seat, and someone who'd never think to pick up, you know, some article, some book review, some kind of political idea, would just kind of pick it up and, you know, read it. And, you know, maybe you could seduce them into thinking things that they wouldn't think about otherwise, which is very different from academia, which has its value and has its purpose, but reaches a narrower.
Absolutely.
You know, kind of
audience. Yeah. I mean, and that's why I had such a tough time, especially in the politics of academia. I think people would be sort of surprised to think of how, I mean, it's really kind of ugly.
Well, there is a joke that the politics are so nasty in academia because the stakes are so low. But I don't really agree. The stakes are very high.
They are.
Because these people control whether these other people get jobs.
Right.
So that's why they're so nasty to each other.
Yeah. It was ugly. And I was 21 and surprised and didn't understand what was happening. And I was like, I just want to live on a college campus for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice?
The stakes are high on their tiny islands.
Yes.
I will say.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But then not necessarily elsewhere.
Did we get to the question that I kept cutting you off on?
Damn, did I know? I'm sorry. No, but no, I something that I wanted to point out is, yes, you know, first and foremost, I will say a very fun read. I can't imagine any academic journal where you would be able to get away with, you know, with being able to phrase things so, you know, so well,
artfully.
Yeah, that's basically
well,
it.
Well, there's lots of sex, drugs, and rock and roll in my books.
Which is great, you know, I will say, so you've been criticized for having yourself criticized a sacred cow, that being Ronald Reagan. I will say that you have been not only that, but you've been critical of Jimmy Carter and a number of
That's
the
right.
right. You know, pretty much everybody who was in office at around that time, LBJ, pretty much everybody who was there, you know, you talked about.
I'm pretty nice to Martin Luther King, though.
I would say yes. Yeah, I don't think that you talked to him about.
It's awfully generous of you.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's a real fun read. All of them are actually.
And where can one buy this fun read?
Yes, really. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon.com. Actually, you can find all of your books on Amazon.com.
Absolutely.
And actually, you posted something else about the warehouse workers for this the theft screening.
Oh,
and they're going to the Supreme Court.
You know, I'm not a big Barack Obama fan these days. So there's a Supreme Court case. We hear about the ones about gay marriage, which is a very important issue. But a lot of these kind of issues about economic stuff kind of fly under the radar. And Amazon.com is in the Supreme Court because they want the right to not have to pay their workers for the half an hour they have to wait in line to get the security screenings. So basically they want to steal free labor from their workers. And the Obama administration filed a brief taking Amazon's side.
Outside, really?
And, and against the workers' side. Hmm.
And are the screenings to make sure they're not stealing anything?
The screenings are, and that's fine. You know, they certainly have a right to do that.
But they should still be on the clock.
They should be on the clock, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you want to protect your, you know, anti-theft, which is understandable.
Right.
But, I mean, when I used to work at Macy's, you know, do you just in and out? I mean, have you worked in retail, Esmeralda?
I did, and they would have to check your bag.
Right, they would check your bag, you know.
You couldn't leave either. Like, it had to be a manager or something. You're, like, standing around, like, come on, I want to go.
Right. Had you clocked out, or were you still on the clock? I think
because I may have clocked out because it was so quick.
Right.
They would just look and then be like, okay,
but they have so many employees.
An hour. Because these warehouses are literally a half a mile long.
Right. Right.
And these guys have to, you know, they literally run 10 miles a day on these concrete floors.
Oh, man.
And we all know that, you know, Amazon.
They're struggling.
They don't air condition these warehouses because Bezos decided it was cheaper to actually station ambulances outside the fulfillment centers.
Oh. Wow. We are talking to author Rick Perlstein and joined in studio by Esmeralda Leone, who we're happy to have back from England.
Thanks.
And Charles Turk, the CEO and co-founder of Sancho CME. I don't know if we're holding. I don't know if Rick wants to stay or not. I know it's getting pretty late. All right.
You know, tomorrow's a school day.
All right. So tomorrow you have an event at the Seminary Co-op, and that's at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock, yes.
And that's for the anthology for The Baffler. Salvos from The Baffler, No Future for You. And all of his books can be found on Amazon.com. That's Rick Perlstein. Thank you so much for
joining
us again.
Thank you, darling. It was so fun.
We'll talk to you again soon. 720 WGN, time for a little break. We are having so much fun. I hope you're having a lovely Monday morning. You're listening pretty late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and I'm live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'm joined by the CEO and co-founder of Sancho CME, a continuing medical education company. This Charles Turk is with us in studio. We also have Esmeralda Leone, who is our traffic reporter extraordinaire, and she's just recently back from England.
I am.
And how long were you in England for?
10 days.
You were in Manchester?
I was, yes, Manchester.
And why Manchester?
My friend is from Manchester, so he stayed here for a month, and then we traveled together to Manchester because I'd never been up there. And he told me that none of his friends have been to where he's from. He always comes here to Chicago and visits. And
well, that sounds like he was sad that none of his friends have been to where he's from.
Probably.
Yeah.
Because nobody knows. No. Considering we're, you know, it's a completely different culture. So
sure.
I had him over for dinner with friends of mine before we left. And we were all talking about childhood things. And then afterwards he was like, you know, I couldn't really, like, relate at all. And I'm like, sorry, guy.
But why didn't he talk about his childhood stuff?
I did.
In comparison.
I did go, hey, what was it like for you over there?
Over there.
And then it just, like, he just kind of froze up and
aww,
it didn't work.
They didn't have, like, what kind of things were you talking about? Like, what, playing Operation like, or Clue? Or?
I think it was just childhood cartoons and things like that.
Which it's are
like,
done now, by the way. You know, Saturday morning cartoons are, while you were gone, they
what?
Ended. This past Saturday was the first time that, and I don't know how many years, there were not Saturday morning cartoons.
Although this morning I watched Mr. Magoo. Was on one of the free channels.
Oh, really?
How was that?
It was really good, actually.
Fantastic.
It's kind of sad how blind he is, though. It's kind of depressing.
But also kind of funny, right?
Yeah, it's cute.
Isn't that what Mr. Magoo is about?
He confused a walrus with his friend.
Oh, and who wouldn't?
Yeah.
Right?
And the walrus did at one point wear a tuxedo and was eating dinner.
Right.
So.
Well, so it's easy to make that assumption that it's your friend.
Exactly.
Now, when you flew on Aer Lingus.
I did.
And was it nonstop, or did you have a connecting?
No, so we flew into Dublin, and then Dublin to Manchester.
Did you get a chance?
We didn't.
No.
I did get to eat some salmon. Apparently, they're big on salmon.
Yeah, they like
is that a thing?
The fishing community, yes.
Okay. I didn't know.
Surrounded by water, so Ireland loves them some fish.
I ate a salmon on a bagel, and I was told, why did you do that? You should have gotten it on bread.
Oh.
My friend's very judgy.
Do you say that bagels are made out of bread-like material?
No, he was like, why'd you get it on a bagel? That's weird. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, that's...
Yeah.
I thought that was a natural
thing. Let me introduce you to the Jewish community in the United States.
I know. He was like, big thing. Do it on bread. I'm like, whatever.
So you flew in from Dublin to into Manchester?
Yes.
And and Manchester's more of a working class.
It is. It reminded me so much of Chicago.
Okay.
So I felt at home, you know, just being there and
Was it your first time
around.
To England?
No, I'd been to London
okay.
a few years ago.
But
it was much different. I was by myself and it was super cool because I got to stay. It was for, I worked at another radio station and they let me go on a press junket. So I got to stay at the Mayfair Hotel.
Wait a minute. What kind of press junket are, do I get press junkets? What are my press junkets?
Trust me, this is the one and only press junket I've ever been to.
I want a press junket.
Yeah.
To London.
No, it was
that's
the, it was
very
the best.
Cool. Now, and were you in Manchester? Were you staying in a hotel or with your friend's family?
No, I stayed with him. He lives by himself.
Oh, he lives okay. There. So he lives in Manchester. He was visiting
yes,
you
yes.
from, okay. I'm totally, so
yeah,
how
yeah,
do you
yeah.
know him?
He came into the bar one night and he's a very charming, very like talkative guy because
okay.
he's for a while, some years back, he traveled around Illinois or around the States, just going around everywhere and he had to make friends. So
was
it was
curious?
Like, just talk to, yeah.
He was just bouncing around the United
yeah,
States.
Yeah, he's been everywhere.
What
he's
does
like
he do?
New Orleans and he does, I don't know what he does. Like, I do know, but it's like a weird...
Okay.
It takes 10 minutes to explain, and it's like, and it's still like, that doesn't
You're
sound
very
right.
adventurous. This is someone that you met who came into your
well,
bar.
Well, I've known him for like a year now.
Okay.
So it's, which sound, doesn't even sound that much.
No, it's a lot. I think it's
more.
A year. But mostly you've known him like through emailing and stuff, or?
Yeah, he stays here a month at a time.
And you hang out
He
then.
Comes back every 6 months or so, so.
I'm like curious for your safety, that's why. I mean, you're
no,
here for-
No, he's a really nice guy, and it's really
but
funny
your family
because-
knew where you were going. You know?
They did, but my mom's like-
Yeah, that helps.
I didn't get to meet him.
Oh.
And I'm like, sorry, Mom. And he even too, he was like, I didn't get to meet your mom. She probably thinks I'm like some weirdo. And I'm like, oh, well.
By the way, I will say that one thing that I try to push for, you know, or something that I like when I go to foreign countries is I try to go visit not necessarily places that I long to visit, although I certainly like to go to those, but also places where I know a native. And, you know,
yeah,
it'll be interesting
you know,
to hear what, you know, what your visit was in Manchester, knowing a native.
Yeah, because he could tell me where stuff was
right.
that wasn't mm-hmm. touristy.
Right.
And took
because,
you there, presumably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had some Ethiopian.
Nice.
Okay. Super good.
I'm so sorry that this is going to happen to you, Esmeralda.
What's going
now,
on?
See, taxi driver Bob, I don't think this is appropriate because this is, we're not continuing our conversation from Friday night. I don't know if it's fair.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, no. See
what
happened?
What is it?
Okay, so it happened on Friday night. I don't even know why or how it happened. I can't, I'm trying to remember. Does anyone have the genesis of the sloppy saliva stories? Maybe taxi driver Bob can tell me. Hold on a second. Taxi driver Bob, why, how did we stop? Was it, who started talking about sloppy saliva on,
You did. You were talking about how your dad kissed you one time and he got saliva all over your
My dad was a sloppy
like,
kisser. Ooh. Yeah, my dad was, because he was a smoker. So
mm-hmm.
whenever he would kiss me on the cheek, it would be like, it would be a big sloppy.
Daddy, let me kiss you.
Yeah, and it would, and then I would feel bad because my instinct would be like, and you know, try to wipe it off. I think we were talking about the hugging chair, and then we were talking about how we weren't big huggers in my household until
mm-hmm.
I was older, and I actually had to learn how to hug. I mean, I would have friends that would like really like squeeze me too hard.
See, that's so funny because in my house you hug everybody. That's how
no.
you say hello and goodbye is hugging.
Yeah, I'm not.
You could hug total strangers.
Did you have the senator in tonight? Did you have the senator in tonight?
I did not have Katowski on. He's on Tuesday evenings.
Because he would have potentially had a real, I hate to use the pun, but a juicy pun.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I feel like you want me to compile a collection of sloppy saliva stories.
I think that if anybody has a good one to offer up, by all means, but if they don't, then, you know.
So Esmeralda, to catch you up, I mean, like, there were different things, like people falling asleep and they had saliva, and then people making out. Like,
as they woke up?
I'm not gonna repeat my
No. As I say, what you know about me so far is that I have no shame. I've also talked about how my jaw unhinges, and the first time I was making out with a boy in high school, yeah. I was on my back and we were making out, and my jaw popped open and he kind of fell into my mouth, and he was terrified because he thought I was an alien all
that
of a sudden.
Sounds like a cross between The Exorcist and Jaws.
Yeah, he was terrified. I mean, like, he popped up. He was like, "What just happened to your face?"
Nice.
So I have no. It doesn't have to be necessarily sloppy saliva stories. We talk about anything embarrassing that we've seen or experienced.
Well,
yes,
you know, there's a meme going around the internet. I don't know how old it is, but there's a sign that says free lap dances and sloppy kisses.
Okay.
And it's for the Animal Medical Center.
Aww. So I'm gonna let Esmeralda off the hook. If she does have a sloppy saliva story, she'll share if she wants to.
Yeah, that's one thing that's kind of. That is, well, supposedly a dog's mouth is cleaner than our mouth, but I kind of find it difficult to watch people, like, you know, basically, like, kissing their dogs and
that grosses me out.
I agree.
Yeah, it's too much. I mean, I love animals more than I do people, but French kissing your dog is not my idea of a good time.
No, thanks.
No. Yeah. Or taking pictures of it.
I will say I commonly kiss my dog's head. You know, I don't mouth kiss any dogs, nor do I plan to.
This is all important information that we're compiling as part of the Pretty Late Show.
I give my cat polite, like, air kisses, like, in his cheek, like,
and that's really all your cat wants.
Like, it's
from
my
you.
Girlfriend or something. Like, hey,
your cat's not looking for
commitment. Well, you definitely do not want to kiss a cat in its mouth because it has got all sorts of
bad breath.
I know where your mind is going to, but it's supposedly really, like, filthy. Lots of bacteria and
Well, you know what's funny that you mentioned that coming up after the break? We're going to talk about how maybe your mucus can save your life. You're listening to Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Thank you for listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and suddenly everyone's left the studio and I'm just hanging out. It's fine. I'm hanging out by myself. What's going on? Where's everyone going? There's been a lot of food in the studio tonight, and I want to thank again Pronzi's. We had Luke Cicero from Pronzi's bring us some wonderful, tasty treats. However, I do want to point out that it seems that all day today, and possibly all day yesterday, and ever since Friday, it seems as though a lot of food has been coming into the studio, and I feel really bad. The Steve Cochran Show is going to be really upset when they come in. Every single garbage can is filled with a lot of garbage, and I claim no responsibility for. I just the last couple hours, I've accumulated some plates and cardboard boxes, but I have been. I've been searching for a lot of stories for tonight, and it was funny that taxi driver Bob called and asked if Esmeralda had any sloppy saliva stories, because that was a conversation that started on Friday that was very strange, but I didn't expect to jump back into it, but since it had happened on Friday, I did find a story about how your mucus can possibly save your life, which sounds really disgusting, only I've been seeing stories like this lately where there are, you know, certain sorts of compounds that the doctors have and scientists have found in various parts of the human body that perhaps can answer some questions about you know, how we fight viruses and infections. And I had seen something actually, and this will be really gross to some people, but I had seen how some the pH and Dr. Turk,
whatever you want.
All right, Charles. I sent you this story about mucus, and that's going to gross people out. But there is something to be said for what's already present in our body to fight off infections. We have a built-in system for that kind of thing, right?
That is correct, and it's an area of burgeoning research right now. You know, and not only in this area of mucus, but then also in, I guess, even less savory areas.
Right, and I had seen a story about the vagina possibly having sorts of, like, whether it's chemicals or the mucus there.
Oh, sure, yeah. I mean, there are less organ systems and organs that are organ systems that are less gross to people, certainly, that also have important functions as immunological barriers, such as, well, the skin,
right.
For example. So, yeah, you know, the skin, the vagina, you know, what we have is we've got normal flora, so bacteria that help us.
What's flora?
Flora. Mm-hmm. So normally one would think of the forest, I think, and plants and so on and so forth. But flora in this case is used to describe bacteria that have, well, when you call them normal flora, they're the bacteria that commonly inhabit our body, be it on the skin or in the throat, anywhere in the alimentary canal, you know, so the stomach, the intestines, and so on, mm-hmm. essentially anywhere in the body.
So now people always think of like good bacteria and bad bacteria because they see all these commercials for like Activa and the yogurts and things like that. And actually, one of the first conversations I had with you, I asked you, I had emailed you and asked if taking yogurt was actually helpful when you're taking when you're on antibiotics, because people do that. They want to take probiotics sort of to, I guess, strengthen their flora, their good flora.
Yeah, I will say that the there are different species there are millions of species of bacteria and and everything else for that matter. But but we are talking about bacteria. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there has been enough research to really, conclusively say in most disease states mm-hmm. that probiotics are effective. You know, I think that there have been studies of efficacy and there has been evidence in favor of treating certain disease states with probiotics. But usually even then, it's very specific bacteria, very specific species. And that doesn't mean that the probiotic that you are buying or seeing on the shelf contains that particular species.
But it can't hurt to take it. And I guess if people figure, there's sometimes a psychological aspect to taking something that you think is helping.
You know, there was some thought, I think, that there are some probiotics where there was some concern about using them, perhaps in ICU patients, and the thought that maybe it'd be associated with a bloodstream infection. But by and large, you don't really see any drawbacks to taking probiotics, aside from the fact that it's money out of your pocket, and for possibly nothing more than a sugar pill, essentially,
possibly
placebo
right.
effect.
Well, and that's the thing is that it's trying to repopulate the gut with good bacteria, right? So there's a woman named Katarina Rybeck, and so this article. I mean, anytime I see the word mucus in an article, I gotta stop. I don't know why. I see mucus, I'm like, come again? The human body pumps out more than a gallon of mucus each day, and we think of that as something you throw away, but there's this scientist, she's a biochemist at MIT, and she's discovered that mucus is actually a sophisticated filter. I mean, it can't really be a sudden discovery. I mean, that seems like it's just people are not paying attention to mucus.
No, and actually, I wasn't quite clear. I mean, so I think part of the reason you're seeing this article now is because the news associated with this was the fact that she was named something like Popular Science's top 10
brilliant people. Or
yes,
whatever.
Basically of the year, and it was based on research that she had published last year mm-hmm. Or late last year. But then the article talks mostly about research that was done even earlier than that. And the research that it talks about had to do with the fact that that mucus is not just this indiscriminate net that blots everything out and prevents it from getting into the body, but that it actually discerns bacteria and viruses, for example.
So it's intelligent, slippery stuff?
I wouldn't necessarily go that far, but no. I would say that it's more highly specific to those pathogens than previously thought.
Right. And the other thing was that, and one of the things that caught my attention was that she found and her colleagues found that pregnant women at high risk for preterm birth have weaker, more permeable cervical mucus. And anyone who's been pregnant, we all know that there are things in place. I don't know if I ever told you this, Charles, when I was pregnant with Griffin, we were at Northwestern, and it wasn't Prentice yet. It was before they built this beautiful hospital they have now for women's health. But I was concerned because I was going for my first ultrasound, and I was concerned that I hadn't freshened up. I didn't realize that I was going to be in the stirrups. So I thought I was grabbing what I thought were baby wipes off the counter, and they were not.
They were Clorox wipes?
They were Clorox. It was 2000. It was right when Clorox wipes just started, came on the market as wipes. It was 2003. Yeah, 2003. No, you don't have to do any research. It's fine. There was a lot of running around there because of the cervical. They explained to me because of the cervical mucus that was the protection that my baby needed for those chemicals to not cross through the placenta. So I knew a lot about this, and I'm sure that Caitlin's fascinated with that conversation. Say cervical mucus again. That's the last time I'm going to say it.
Oh, we've got even more tasty things to talk about too that are, you know, related to the body's protective systems.
Really?
Yeah, we do. You know, we've got. Well, you had sent me a story. Actually, I had sent you a story.
Yes, you did. You sent me. Well, because I sent you a story about how there might be a way to take some pills that right. have like little.
Microneedles.
Microneedles, so yes. that it can deliver the medicine at different stages by puncturing parts of the...
Well, so here's the story. You know that there are some drugs out there that you can only take subcutaneously or intravenously. Mm-hmm. You can't take them by mouth.
Okay.
And so the idea is that this gets around that by basically taking an advanced technology that involves these tiny needles. And the and what they will do is the capsule will dissolve either in the stomach or the intestine, and then these needles will essentially puncture the lining of the organ, whichever one it is, the stomach or the intestine, and then inject drugs directly into the bloodstream. And what that will do, well, the idea is that that the pain receptors aren't the same, and that you would not feel that, and that it's a way of being able to orally take a medication that otherwise would only be able to be administered
with a syringe,
exactly,
with a needle. Interesting. Yes. And so is that really mostly for people who are afraid of needles, or is that maybe a differently effective way of delivering the medicine?
Well, I think that it's too early to say. I mean, certainly that's I think that no matter what, I think that it's I think that the idea of taking pills is more palatable to people in general. Mm-hmm. You know, and not only that, but you know, when you puncture the skin, at least on the exterior of the body. So when you puncture the skin and you administer a drug subcutaneously or intravenously, you do there is a slight risk of infection and,
okay.
and breaking the immune barrier of the skin that isn't quite the same from inside the stomach or the intestines.
Can I just say that when my twice now in my life I've been in a situation where my parents had wanted me to give them injections. And that's, I mean, it's so funny how cavalier doctors seem to be about, like, well, just have your daughter do it. You know, whether it's a B12 injection or for my dad. I don't think I had to do the Procrit, but there were some booster shots I had to give him to get him through the chemo. And I was terrified. For one thing, like, making sure that there were no bubbles. And then what you were talking about with the, you know, what if when I puncture the skin and I haven't cleaned the area well enough?
Right.
Why do they want people, why do they want civilians doing these things?
Some of it is economics, you know. I mean, like, I guess the question is, you know, are you able to justify, you know, paying for a nurse to come to, you know, just for those particular services?
Or like a visit. I mean, like, I could have just gone to like the Walgreens or something and had the,
I
my dad was super proud that his daughter was giving him, like, he had me do it at a Dunkin' Donuts one day. That's not right. That's not okay. Here's your Boston cream and your B12. Yes, Caitlin? Yes.
Got a break.
All right, let me take a break. Oh, I don't even. Okay. Well, you know what? We'll find out about that disgusting pill we were talking about earlier.
Fantastic.
We have other things. 312-981-7200 if you want to join the conversation. It's Monday morning and you've stayed up pretty late. Or have you gotten up pretty early? I don't know. It depends on your point of view, I guess. From my point of view, it's pretty late. But these are my hours. This is where I thrive. I've always been a night owl. I'm joined in studio by Charles Turk, the CEO and co-founder of Scientia, CME, which is a continuing medical education company. And there's actually a couple of things medically that I wanted to talk to you about tonight. We were talking about different delivery systems for medicine last hour, pills with syringes on them, little microneedles.
That's right.
It's weird.
To inject large, typically large molecules, but I mean, I guess there could be exceptions. But in any case, molecules that are typically broken down in stomach acid. And that not normally would be broken down to their component bits and would not be functional by the time they got to your bloodstream normally.
Now, when you were, because you worked as a pharmacist as a trade, I mean,
yes.
It's part of you, that's your training.
Yes.
And I mean, were there pharmaceuticals like this that you, you know, had to distribute that were, that this seems like it would take extra medical instruction, obviously.
Well,
like,
the idea is, I mean, and you talked about this a little bit earlier, Patty, you talked about how you'd go and your father Procrit injections, which are used to boost your red blood cell counts.
Right.
You know, for people who are receiving chemotherapy, it's also for people who have chronic kidney disease.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of other indications as well for Procrit, for example.
And a really ridiculously expensive medication, by the way. At the time, in 2001, it was $1,000 a shot.
Yeah, would you believe that it, you know, that and its competing agents, so that drug class was the top cost for hospitals.
Really?
When it came to drugs.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the erythropoietic stimulating agents.
And you had to fight for it, too, because it was considered it was considered preventative rather than... right, but without it, they said that it would he would have to have a blood transfusion. So it's kind of like, well, then it's going to happen either way, and that seems more expensive, and a hospital stay.
I will say, too, that drug, and this is a little tangential, but that drug class has sort of fallen off the map and a little bit more out of favor, because once you get a person above a certain threshold of hemoglobin and you continue to give the agent, well, actually, either way, but particularly once you get them above a certain threshold of hemoglobin, there's an increased risk of blood clots.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that someone like my dad was on he was on warfarin, and he was so he was also, then he had the Procrit, he had a lot, and then he was taking codeine, which raised his blood pressure. It was liquid codeine. Okay. So there was a lot and that was one of my questions I've had for you before. Actually, we had a wonderful listener call in when she was taking different medications. What goes on with the pharmacist as far as keeping track of what the doctors are prescribing? Because sometimes you'll have, you know, these specialists, whether it's the radiologist says take this and your GP says, you know, take this. Is there, I mean, and I'm guessing it's better now on the computer screens and you can tell what someone should and shouldn't be taking.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think that like in so many different sectors, computer technology has revolutionized what it is that we're capable of doing. You know, but a pharmacist, you know, I think that, you know, and to an extent, there's better information sharing nowadays. But a lot of times, you know, healthcare is still fragmented.
Right.
And one place that the one nexus that a patient commonly goes to that isn't common, you know, where the single place that the patient goes to get all their prescriptions, you know, or the one
you're like the hub
care, basically, yes, is a pharmacy. You know, now a patient can jump pharmacies, you know, particularly when they're, you know, say trying to you know, get different prescriptions for things like codeine or something like that. They sort of hop
or out of convenience, like maybe the Walgreens is 24 hours here, but on the way home from work I can go to this one over here.
Right. You know, but oftentimes they stay with the same
company
brand, and they have a centralized system for keeping track of things. So, you know, it's there that that you're able to screen for interactions where the specialist that they see, the cardiologist, may not be aware of the oncologic agents, the chemotherapy that the patient is taking prescribed by their oncologist. So, you know, it may very well be that, you know, that the one place where there is screening, you know, or effective screening for the majority of the medications that they're on is in the pharmacy.
And the other thing we had learned last time was that if you're taking something else that your doctor, maybe it's an old prescription that you had, or maybe it's something from your family members, which is against the law, which we also learned, that you need to alert your doctor that you're taking anything that they may not be aware of.
Yeah, doctor, you know, and pharmacist, I think it's a good idea. You know, I mean, the one thing that that isn't caught over in pharmacies is over-the-counter meds. And by that, I mean, you know, you can't necessarily screen for those. You don't necessarily know that the patient's taking them because they buy it over-the-counter and it's not part of the prescription record.
Oh, interesting. Right, so, and there's things that can be counteractive with dangerous to take with it. Combination.
Right, and we've talked about drug food interactions, for example.
And alcohol.
Alcohol being one, yes. Absolutely. But you know, there are others as well.
One of the stories that came up, and now, so your response to me when I said, hey, look at this pill that has little micro needles on it, what was your response to me?
Well, you know, I went more so toward the scatological, and I said, you know, let's talk about the poop pills that are out there that people are hawking.
Caitlin, you know, you're hoping we'd get to the poop pills.
Yeah.
I
can't even like describe the face I'm making right now for radio.
I can. It's not happy.
So yeah, no, you know, and I will. So you know, what this all comes down to is the fact that there is a there's a condition. It's commonly associated with a bacterium. So there is a condition called pseudomembranous colitis. It's commonly caused by a Clostridium difficile.
Of course it is. That's exactly what I thought.
Oh yeah, no, I knew that was on the tip of your tongue. So, you know, and what will happen commonly is that a lot of our a lot of our antibiotics will wipe out our normal flora, as we were talking about earlier. And that allows opportunistic organisms like Clostridium difficile to thrive. And so it can do that in the absence of competition from our normal flora, which is one place where perhaps probiotics might be useful,
right,
or antibiotic-associated diarrhea. But in any case, so this Clostridium difficile, it's a real scourge. And there are very few antibiotics that treat it directly.
Because you end up possibly doing more damage?
It's just that, you know, there are a handful of drugs at our disposal that actually kill that organism.
Okay.
And they're not always effective. The cure rate isn't always as high as we'd like it to be. So one alternative that people have proposed in the past is something called fecal microbiota transplants.
Yeah, poop transplants. By the way, I wanted to tell you this. This is an episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, it was actually, they had the patient, she's a hypochondriac, so she's always over-treating, so she has stripped her, she needs a poop transplant from her husband. They need someone in her that lives with her, because then they would have similar bacteria, and she has to have a tube, like a
yes.
So through her nose.
The truth is, it can go in either end, you know, because the ultimate location is the intestines. And
by the way, there are Grey's Anatomy fans going, oh, I remember that episode. Oh, yeah. It's with the guy from West Wing that's now on Scandal. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I hate to say it, but like, you know, these transplants, you know, I mean, they've been less well studied than drugs, because who's putting the money up for poop transplants?
Right. Who's doing that research?
Yeah, exactly.
The mice don't even want to have anything to do with that.
That's a good point. Anyway,
in order to repopulate the flora.
Right. You know, so directly by transplanting flora. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the cure rates are amazing. They're much better than any of the drugs that are out there. You know, oftentimes around 90% on the first pass.
Okay.
So the first course of treatment. Anyway, what they've been able to do is these stool transplants are typically a very involved process. And what they've looked at doing.
And by involved, you mean it's kind of gross.
It's invasive too. I mean, so they're putting a tube either, you know,
through your nose,
right, or
rectally.
Yes.
Okay.
So anyway, what they've developed is a way to incorporate them into capsules, and it's a 2-day course. And that's...
now, is that again from somebody within that lives with you? I mean, do they
and
synthetic?
Yeah, and you don't necessarily need somebody who's lived with you.
Okay.
I mean, now, granted, I'm not a complete expert in the area of fecal
Grey's Anatomy. Apparently, is
right.
apparently, the writers have done their homework.
Well, either they have, or they wanted a dramatic twist.
Yes, that's true. Because she has to have her boyfriend. He has to poop for her in order to have a bowl, and then.
It's not uncommon, because that's, you know, that might be the first person you go to.
But exactly.
Anyway.
Right. It was something about being exposed to the same sorts of bacteria and things like that. That was the thinking behind that. We're hanging out with Charles Turk, who is the co-founder and CEO of Scientia CME. You can go to scientiacme.org and find out more information about the continuing medical education information he has there. And that's for all our health professionals. I know we have a lot of nurses and doctors. And who else would you say? Doctors, nurses, physical therapists?
Oh, yeah. Physician's assistants, nurse practitioners. You know, these are the folks for whom we create programming.
To keep your licensing?
To keep your license, absolutely.
All right. So go and find out more information there. We're hanging out pretty late, 720 WGN. Oh.
Last year, my marathon time was Tuesday about 1 p.m. I'm pretty confident I'll be done by Monday's show. One tip an old friend told me, if you're running the marathon and your arm goes numb, get yourself some Gatorade and take a break.
The Steve Cochran Show gets rolling this morning at 5 on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Lindsay. As producer of the Mr. Fix-It Show, we always tell people fixing up your home does not have to be overwhelming and overpriced. Tom Jenke, owner here at Builder Supply Outlet, will help you get a quality designer look for a lot less.
Lindsay, Builder Supply Outlet wants you to be proud of your home and how much you saved improving it.
As a young family and first-time homeowners, I was so impressed with the help I received from your expert staff and professional designers. Their free consultation showed me I'm able to afford better products and do a lot more for a lot less money than I expected.
When you shop for your cabinets, countertops, doors, flooring, and plumbing from Builder Supply Outlet, you'll get the highest quality products at true outlet prices every day on every item.
Builder Supply Outlet is easy to find. It's just 5 miles east of the Oakbrook Shopping Mall on Cermak Road in Broadview.
Or check us out at buildersupplyoutlet.com.
Quality and savings are what you get at Builder Supply Outlet.
Unbelievable.
What?
Washington politicians, they just don't get it.
I hear you. Senator Dick Durbin is no different.
Can you believe he's been in Washington for 32 years?
32 years?
Yep. And during that time, he's grown the debt over $16 trillion.
That's money our children and grandchildren will have to pay off.
That's right. And just like other career politicians, he is bankrolled by lobbyists and special interest groups.
I read he has taken more than $9 million from them.
Sounds like he's doing just fine.
He sure is, but we elected him to be looking out for the rest of us. I don't know why we keep sending career politicians like Dick Durbin back to Washington and expecting anything to change.
Not this year. Dick Durbin has been in Washington too long and has lost touch.
I'm Jim Oberweis, and I approve this message because 32 years in Washington is too long for anyone.
Paid for by Oberweis for Senate.
The Ovation Nation phenomenon is growing by thousands of satisfied customers every week. If Ovation Cell Therapy didn't deliver on their guarantee of thicker, stronger, and longer hair growth, friends wouldn't be telling their friends how great Ovation is. And they do.
Ovation is the best thing since sliced bread.
I really like the results I've gotten. My hair is fuller and looks so much healthier.
I love Ovation. It's worked better than any other hair products I've tried, and I've tried a lot. Ovation is one of those products you want to tell all your friends about.
For thicker, stronger, longer, and healthier hair, simply log on to ovationhair.com to learn how to reduce the breakage from harsh chemicals and overprocessing. Restore dry, brittle, damaged hair. Log on to ovationhair.com and click on WGN at checkout for a special introductory discount.
Ovation Cell Therapy really works, guaranteed. Log on to ovationhair.com and remember to select WGN at checkout for your special savings.
ovationhair.com.
Find stories that take you further with the new ChicagoTribune.com. Digitally remastered to fit your device, digitally remastered to fit your life. You're listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. I'm live in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue, and I'm joined in studio by the CEO and co-founder of Scientia CME, Charles Turk. He's also a, would you say a sketch comic or a performer? Is that on your resume? Bitter Jester, Board of Directors, all those things?
A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
Out.
Jack of all trades.
Yes.
All right.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And we've been talking about bioflora. Is it bioflora?
Oh, yeah. Normal flora.
About. The poop Florida. Transplants.
Yes.
We'll just sum up.
That's much better. Turn my headphones on. Okay.
Were you not hearing me before?
It was a little bit more distant.
I was wondering why you were ignoring me just completely. We have a question from a caller. We have Dwayne on the line. Hey, Dwayne, how you doing?
Hey, Patty. I called last night too.
Yeah, no, it's good to hear from you. Always good to hear from you, Dwayne.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie called The Osmosis Jones?
We have not seen the movie Osmosis Jones. And I'm guessing is it an animated movie about the inside of the body? Isn't that part of it?
Yeah. It's with Bill Murray, and he is, he eats unhealthy. He's an unhealthy person. And then, he gets this, badly infectious disease where it's fighting himself. He gets pneumonia, I think, and then there's like this fight within the body, and it's like, but I was just wondering if it's true to that where, but I've heard a rumor that, okay, this is going to be so disgusting, but then your show's.
Okay, yeah, we've been going in that direction. Yes, it's an open format to a discussion like this. Go ahead.
Where the rumor is zits, where people have zits, why people have zits is because the bacteria that's forming in that part of that body is a bacteria that's trying to get out. Is that true or not?
Charles?
I don't know so much about that.
Not in your dermatology rotation as a pharmacist?
And certainly the pus that comes out is populated by dead white blood cells. And I don't know if the movie...
Is that what that is? Is dead white blood cells?
Yeah.
I've never known. I always thought it was grease. We all think it's grease.
That's certainly a component. You do see white pus.
Okay.
Say
pus again.
Pus.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. There you go. So I don't quite know how it's. I mean, just because Patty and I haven't seen Osmosis Jones, it's hard to comment on to what extent they, you know, they took creative liberties and to what extent they, you know, creatively showed things that are actually fairly truthful.
And Dwayne, since you're asking, did you also see Inner Space with Dennis Quaid and Martin Short? Do you remember that one? Dennis Quaid, they've created a module, like a way in which you can insert a tiny, just a teeny tiny little space.
I mean, that's basically it. I mean,
he's an astronaut, isn't he?
Well,
Dennis Quaid?
I can't remember because the last time I saw it was probably close to the time the movie came out.
Right, you would have been a toddler.
I actually
were you allowed
was.
To say a blade?
I was very young. But it was on VHS. But,
yes.
Anyway, yeah, no, I mean, but the idea being that, yes, it's an astronaut-like figure in a spaceship that has been miniaturized and can make its way through the body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't remember why there's only one or what have you. I'm sure there's a, you know,
there's a reason
rationale.
For that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that movie came out in 1987. So that's...
yeah, honestly, it probably wasn't long after that that I saw the movie. But anyway, Dwayne, this is the premise sounds somewhat similar, although it looks like Osmosis Jones is an animated movie.
Right, and this one was yes.
Well, Patty, the animation, it wasn't a person that was fighting inside. He took a pill, and it was the osmosis was supposed to be like the pill that was fighting for him.
Gotcha.
And it was like a, how can I say it? Like a defensive, for your quarterback or something.
Right, right. So he's out there, you know, kind of going down the front lines to kind of kick the ass of the infection.
Yeah, it was supposed to protect the blood cells from getting killed from the bad guys. And he was bigger than your blood cells.
Ah.
And that's where, the osmosis. And I think, I can't remember who it was,
Chris Rock?
Chris Rock, I think, or somebody of that nature, in voiceover. That,
right, right. That oh, yeah. Character. No, I think you're right about that. That's cool.
So,
I might take a look at that.
I was just.
Oh, you're wondering
I was
how?
Wondering if you guys seen it or something? Okay.
Yeah, no problem.
You guys have a good night, okay?
You too. Thanks, Dwayne. Always appreciate your call.
Hey, people, all right, no problem. Bye.
We invite everyone to call anytime you want. 312-981-7200. You can text us at the same number if you have questions for Charles. You know, when we had you on here last time, I thought it was really sweet that we had a caller ask about a medication that she'd been given. I don't really know what I always feel bad because I don't want to put you on the spot for like having people call with their drug questions. But you and I have been trying to figure out a way to invite people to have a discussion about their medications.
Oh, I've honestly been advocating the same thing and not even necessarily just for myself here, mm-hmm. but also, you know, at least as of right now, it's, you know, it's free advice. You know, it couldn't hurt to call.
Right.
There are,
it is just that. It's just advice. It's not.
Well, that's what it is. And there are 24-hour pharmacies, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, 30 plus years ago, that was a novel concept, but they're around. And, you know, at this point you can talk to, and, you know, maybe even not just the pharmacies, but also at this point, you know, oftentimes, I want to say, insurance companies are providing hotlines as well that are
well on Google. They're saying now when you start typing in medical questions, you're also given an option to do you want to talk to a doctor? So apparently, yeah, and there is something to that. I mean, there's something wonderful about the idea of, you know, it's kind of the same way if you're having a tech question, you know what I mean? Like you get like this pop up bubble. Would you like to talk to a technician?
Well, it's very interesting. I wonder. Mm-hmm. I wonder quite how that works. You know, so they. I mean, I don't know if they've contracted with certain medical centers or you mm-hmm. know or what. So
interesting. Well, I sent you so many articles today. I wasn't going to send you yet another one, but that was one of the. I think I have it on my account, so I'll send that to you. But then on the other hand, you're like, well, who am I talking to if it's not your specific doctor? You know, if you're on Google and a doc, you know, hello, can I help you with that itch you have?
Well, I think at this point Google knows the answer to all medical questions. It's probably teamed up with that Deep Blue program. Or
what's Deep Blue?
Well, I think Deep Blue was the it's Watson. That's what it was. I want to say that Deep Blue was the chess program that beat Garry Kasparov. You know, so it was the computer program that beat the world chess champion.
Oh, okay.
And then there's this program called Watson or Dr. Watson that basically is an encyclopedia of medical facts and, you know, can aid in diagnostics, I think.
Well, well there's
wait, wasn't that also the name of that the Jeopardy player?
Yeah. I
oh, that's
say,
right.
I want to say, yes.
Was it a doctor?
I think it might be the same computer program.
Well, and here's the thing, too, about Google, when you're Googling your medical condition. Well, one, Esmeralda, did I ever tell you this? My mom goes, do you know what? Last night, I didn't feel very well. So I Googled my symptoms, and it said that I was having a stroke, and I should call the ambulance. But I thought, you know what? I have too much work to do tomorrow. I swear.
You know what? That sounds very mom-like.
And you know what? She powered through it, and she's
fine.
She's yeah. totally
turns
fine.
Turns out, all she needed to do were some more dishes. Should we take these calls before or after the break here, Caitlin? Do you want me to? We have people calling for questions for Charles Turk, our pharmacist expert, who maybe he'll take a swing at your questions. 312-981-7200. That's 312-981-7200. But right now, let's take a quick break. Thank you for staying up pretty late with us. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and I'm live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And I'm on 6 nights a week. I'm on Sunday through Friday. Today's Sunday, so that works out very well for me. The only day I have off is Saturday. You work like two different jobs, don't you, Caitlin? Three different. Many,
well,
many different.
I work for two different companies. Mm-hmm. I work in three different departments for Tribune. And then one other company.
All right. And in the other company, we won't say the name of it, but you work in retail.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay to say?
Yes.
And is it your first time working in retail?
No.
Yeah.
No.
I do not miss working in retail or waiting tables for that matter.
I've never done that. I've only worked in...
Really?
Yeah.
Is there a reason why you haven't gone into the restaurant industry?
I could get the other retail jobs.
Okay.
Quicker, I guess. I don't know.
Well, there is something to be said. You are vulnerable to the whims of people. Like, ask Esmeralda. She bartends. And you have your great days where you're raking it in, and other days when everyone's being stingy, and all of a sudden you've gone home with $18 for a 6-hour shift. Right, Esmeralda?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I've actually considered bartending. My dad told me I'd be really good at it.
It's different than food service, mm-hmm. I think. And then especially at certain bars, you can be a little salty.
Yeah, because you're...
Which I totally am.
You're the master of that universe because everyone has to come to you, whether it's the servers or the people that are serving at the bar. And you're protected by the bar, right? With the servers, they're on the floor. People mm-hmm. have access to them. I remember one time I was helping the waitresses at Zany's sort of like just... I was helping them deliver trays. I was still a waitress somewhere else when I was an MC. And someone like was trying to get my attention and they kicked my ankle. Trying to get my attention. And I went on stage, obviously, and ripped them to shreds for being... I mean... You just forget. People are sometimes, some people can be cruel to those who are servers. And someone wrote a great quote about how, you know, servers are, they're serving. They're not your servants. You know, there's sort of this delineation between how you treat people. But I do find there's a different attitude toward women when we work in retail and when we work in the restaurant industry. Why are you smiling like that?
I'm just thinking about all the stories I could tell you about the wonderful customers I've had.
The things that people say to you as a woman?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to. Do you want to share any of those with me?
I
remember when I used to work at Radio Shack, and we had to take a lot of tests for how to hook everything up. And I knew how to do your entire sound system, you
wow.
know, with the audio, all, you know, I knew where, you know, all everything plugged in. And I explained to this guy what he needed to do for his, he had a sound bar he wanted to hook up, and I told him everything. And I went through the whole thing with him, what he needed to make that happen. And then he turned around to my manager and goes, so anyway, and like completely dismissed everything I just said and asked him the exact same question. And my manager said, it's exactly what she has told you. There's nothing I would tell you differently.
Good. I'm glad they did that because I get really annoyed when customers come in and ask me a question. I answer it and they ask like four other employees. Like, I just told you the answer.
Well, I don't know. There seems to be some sort of feminist backlash. And there's something interesting happening with the word feminism lately that it doesn't seem to have. But it's still in the last 20 years, if you said you were a feminist, it meant that you hated men. That was the way mm-hmm. people were taking it
mm-hmm.
as though. And actually what it means is that you are pro person, including women. You're trying to. It's kind of like the high tide raises all boats. And that was because there are disadvantages already built into the system, just trying to, you know, equalize that out, not at the expense of men, but alongside men was the way I had always taken it, mm-hmm. not instead of. And I think that people often take, whether it's, you know, when you're trying to affirmative action and things like that, it's meant to even the playing field. And yes, it has been done at the expense of others at times. It's not the intention. The intention is to level the playing field. But it seems like there's a lot of negativity. And I did want to let Kevin know that we are going to get to you. We are taking care of a couple things in the studio, and we will be getting to your call about the medications that don't have gluten. So if you are willing to hang on, we are not ignoring you. But we're just trying to get through a couple things. And I had this story about a game developer named Brianna Wu. She had to leave her home Saturday night because she was getting death threats through her Twitter. Based on the tweets from Wu, she's a game developer. And there's this thing called Gamergate. It's an online movement concerned with ethics in games, right? And also in journalism and protecting the gamer identity. It all started out as one targeted attack on female game developer Zoe Quinn back in August. So there's a movement, and there a lot of people are bothered by Gamergate, and there are threats against this woman Wu. Her name is, what did I say her name was? Brianna Wu, for being a feminist. So she is being attacked on Twitter and receiving death threats because she's put herself out there as a feminist gamer. And, she's scared to death. She had to leave her home because people found out where she lived. She's the head of development at games studio Giant Space Cat. And she created memes, you know. And the thing about creating memes is it's supposed to be taken, and you know, they can be social commentary, they can be silly, but they, you know, she's using them as a form of expression, and people are taking those memes and using them to attack her for being a feminist. And this has been happening in the last couple of years. Like, there was a comedian that was doing jokes about, he was doing rape jokes, right? Whether or not rape jokes are funny, there was a woman in the audience who spoke out, and that's never fun for a comedian when someone calls you on your material, but she went online and blogged about it, and people were like, you know, tweeting at her, well, you deserve to be raped. Like, there was all kinds of stuff. Oh, yeah. And the same is true for this gaming developer who, because she has been outspoken, she deserves now to die. The response never, ever makes your side looks good when you say you deserve to die or you deserve to be raped. It's very strange. I don't know why those are the go-to comments from people when they get angry about feminism. Does it seem... where does that anger come from?
It's almost like they don't know how to deal with feelings, so they go to the extreme.
Yeah, here's one of the, there's actually someone actually created the tweet, the handle Death to Brianna. That's actually the name of the Twitter handle. I hope you enjoy your last moments alive on Earth. You did nothing worthwhile with your life.
What?
If you have any kids, they're going to die too.
What?
They'll grow up. I don't care. They're going to grow up to be feminists anyway. Your mutilated corpse will be on the front page of Jezebel tomorrow, and there isn't jack you can do about it. And these are the things, these are the kinds of tweets that she's been receiving. And she's not the first woman to experience this kind of treatment after speaking out about women in the gaming industry. There was a video game critic and feminist, Anita Sarkeesian, who had to leave her home because she was getting similar threats on Twitter. And, you know, for me, like, I don't, like, once in a while I'll get, like, nasty things, like, on Facebook, and people misunderstand what my Facebook is for. It's for my friends and for fans. I mean, that's why you say, like, Facebook friends and fans. But it is interesting when you say things, how it can be taken out of context or taken to, people twist things in order to justify their hostility and hatred. Like, they need a target. These people need somewhere to put their anger. And when you're using language like this, you do nothing to encourage a discussion at all. So why even go to Twitter? You know, people who troll and just want to spread hate, there's got to be something else you can do with your time.
You would think.
I'm going to talk to Kevin real quick and see how he's doing. Hey, Kevin.
Oh, hi, Patty. Great show tonight.
Thank you. Our pharmacist expert had to step out for a few moments. Do you want to hang on until we can get him to answer your question? I just didn't want to, ignore you.
No, I'll tell you what. I'll just mention my comments, and then
okay.
I'll maybe if he comes back, if maybe that's, it'll come up again. But
absolutely.
But I just want to say also, Happy Columbus Day.
Happy Columbus Day.
Canada today, Monday, it's Thanksgiving, and we always have our Thanksgiving is always on your Columbus Day.
Oh, I did not know that. That's interesting because I have a Native American friend who calls Thanksgiving your Welcome Day.
Oh, well, no, we've always, no, well, not up in Ontario anyway.
No.
It's always been Thanksgiving, like today, well, today most of us had our turkey dinner today. Tomorrow's the leftover day and the foot, like some baseball, football, and whatever, hockey.
So Canada does turkey as well?
Oh, yeah. That turkey's huge up here. Turkey and ham are huge on the
I do like
and
some
cabbage
ham.
Rolls. Cabbage rolls.
Cabbage rolls? Why cabbage rolls?
It's just a thing that in Canada, Christmas, Easter, and Thanksgiving, huge for cabbage rolls and ham.
Okay.
But turkey's always a mainstay.
Yeah, that's some good stuff. What is the, so in Canada, Columbus Day is not celebrated?
No, we don't celebrate Columbus Day, but I've noticed, even on your promo, that like the 13th of October is your, like today's your Columbus Day, right?
Yes.
And today, like, it's after midnight now. Today is our Thanksgiving. And I've noticed that in the past. You have, I think in New York City, there's a Columbus Day parade?
Yeah, we have a Columbus Day parade here as well.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. In Chicago?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't, because we get the one in New York. They put it on CBC on occasionally. So, oh, okay, Chicago. Well, Patrick Sharp is from here, and he's one of your best players.
I wonder if he's having his Thanksgiving dinner as well. And he should, because we're thankful to have him. So whatever he wants to eat, he can have it. Yeah. They had an amazing game last night. Did you watch any of the Blackhawks games?
I do. My team is Detroit, but I'm a huge Blackhawks fan because I always listen to your station, and I hear a lot of the games, which I love the broadcast, and the fact that Patrick Sharp and Duncan Keith, also from our area. He's Fort Francis.
Oh, I didn't.
That's north of Thunder Bay.
We'll see if they're celebrating their Thanksgiving. It sounds like it's a wonderful way to have a meal. Do you want to hang on? We're gonna take a quick break here, and we can get to your question if you want.
Okay, sure.
All right, hold on 1 second. That's Kevin, and we'll get to him in just a moment. You're listening Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we were talking to a caller from all the way from Canada. We have Kevin on the line. Hey, Kevin.
Hi, I'm back.
I'm back, too. Our pharmacist expert has left me with a website that I could talk to you a little bit about. You had a question about medications that don't have gluten?
Oh. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. A few years ago, I was having real bad stomach pain, and finally I had a real complete physical with a specialist. He found out I had celiac, which means I can't have gluten and wheat.
Right.
And so I've been, it's been over 12 years. I've adjusted well. It's an easy diet, really, and I'm allowed to eat a lot of things, believe it or not.
Turkey, ham, and cabbage rolls, apparently.
Well, even with the cabbage rolls, I'm allowed the cabbage, I'm allowed the rice.
Mm-hmm.
The meat is not got any wheat or additives in it. And I'm allowed all like tomato pastes and,
sure.
But anyway, occasionally when I buy supplements, like I buy vitamin C or like a Centrum supplement, or I buy vitamin B, they're marked on there.
Right.
Gluten free, wheat free,
right.
Yeast free. Now, occasionally I have a chronic ear infection, so I use Cefprazil. It's an antibiotic, Cefprazil.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked the pharmacist if it has gluten, and he says, well, he doesn't think so, but we can never get a definite. And also, occasionally I take beta-histine for on-and-off vertigo. And again, we can't seem to find the answer on prescription medication. Why can't they be a little more definite on if it doesn't have gluten?
Yeah, and here's the thing. I'm at a website called glutenfreedrugs.com.
Okay.
And medications, there are medication and additional links. So I'm looking for the alphabetical list. And you said that was Cefprazil?
Cefprazil. Cefprozil. Mm-hmm. It's an antibiotic that it's pretty common up here in Canada anyway for any kind of, if you get, usually maybe once every 2 years I need that. I get an ear infection.
And have you noticed that you've gotten sicker when you're taking Cefprazil?
No, I haven't, but I don't want to do any more damage,
my
body,
sense.
Since I can't have gluten and yeast, we caught it in time, but a lot of people go through life ignoring gluten ignoring their celiac condition, and they keep eating like they shouldn't be, and that's why they develop cancers and stuff in their intestine. So that's why I'm careful on everything I put on my body now.
I know. I'm trying to look for. Oh, it's CEFP. I'm sorry. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay, let me.
PHCEF Prozil.
Right. I was looking for PHCEF Prozil. It's not coming up on the glutenfree.com, but that doesn't mean that it does have it or not. I mean, I'm not sure if there's maybe a generic name as well. But
what about beta histine? BETA HISTINE. Beta histine.
I'm taking a look.
That's for vertigo. That's a
beta serone. Yeah, that beta histine's not coming up on this gluten-free.
Oh, okay. I wonder if those are they. Well, the thing is, that wouldn't matter if they're only in Canada because webs are worldwide. I mean.
Oh, hey, Julia. How you doing? I thought that Charles had reentered the studio. Have a seat. You can't help us with gluten-free medications. Go ahead.
I call Nick occasionally too. I love his show too.
Oh, he's in the studio.
Both of you.
He has just entered the studio. Nick DiGilio is coming on next. This is Kevin up in Canada. He'll be listening to your show as well. So
I'll be listening to his show for a couple more hours.
Well, if I have any other information from Charles, our pharmacist expert, I'll certainly let you know before we get off the air. And but again, this website is called glutenfreedrugs.com.
Okay, I'm going to write that down. Glutenfreedrugs.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm going to check that out tomorrow. And again, thank you so much for taking my call.
Of course.
Columbus Day, and we, all the Canadians are enjoying their Thanksgiving turkey.
That's right. Happy Thanksgiving to you. And we'll make sure we'll tell Duncan and Sharp the happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, for sure. Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one. And Nick DiGilio is in the studio. Let me make sure I've got your microphone. I think that one's that's the one. That's the one.
I got control over here, too. So.
Yeah, well, you take control whenever you need to. How are you doing, sir?
I'm okay.
All right, then. Excellent. How was your Friday off?
What
do you call it? You have Friday off, right?
Yeah, well, I also had Saturday off because of the Hawks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I heard you guys before the game. What an amazing game.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I was at a bar in Evanston, and I was there for a surprise birthday party for someone. And it was tied up 2-2, right? And then I turn around, and it's like 3-2, and I yell at my bartenders. I'm like, nothing for you guys? No, like, no heads up that something exciting happened? Nothing for the next four goals. Nothing.
The third period, they exploded.
Yeah, it was great.
They looked great. The first period, they looked phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of defensive boo-boos. Second period, both teams look a little lackluster. Mm-hmm. I mean, really nothing happened in the second period. But then the Hawks just exploded in the third. It was unbelievable.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It looked great. I mean, what was it, ended up being 6-2?
6-2. Yeah.
Now, are you a Bears fan? Or do you get into football?
Nah.
There's, I want to point out, and please tell them when they come in at 5 in the morning, that there's still boxes from when I had food here on Friday. Something happened where, like, nothing was cleared
out. Yeah, I mean, the studio upstairs has got a bunch of garbage in it, too.
And the green room is...
It's a mess.
You come in and it smells like a dumpster in the hallways. And I'm embarrassed, but there's nothing. We called and they said that the cleaning crew left at 6 p.m. tonight. So, you know, we didn't get here. I'm just embarrassed to leave the room like this. But that's all. Because we had food, too. Please help yourself.
No.
We had food and Pronzies. There's a lot of food. I feel like I've just been eating constantly. What's coming up on your show?
We're going to talk with a guy who runs a paranormal convention.
Ooh.
He's also a 7th-degree black belt.
Are the two related? Is it
spiritually?
Maybe. Yeah. Right? I don't know that yeah. doesn't
he's
help.
A fascinating guy. He's been on the show before.
Do you want to talk about this? Where do you stand on the supernatural,
I don't know.
Paranormal? Oh, really? Yeah. You're open cuz I'm open to the possibilities.
Well, I mean, you know, it's always weird when you start talking about stuff like this, for me at least, because I kind of go back and forth on it. Because there's got to be something going on.
Right, I agree.
You know, because it's a very spiritual world we live in.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be something out there. I'm not sure what.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think about it too much. I just know sometimes some things happen for a reason or something happens and, you know.
Well, Griffin, you know, my son is 11, mm-hmm. and he believes that there are and has for a long time. And he said, well, you know what Albert Einstein said, that energy is neither created nor destroyed. So when you die, it has to go somewhere, whether it stays or... I'm like, okay, Griffin, why don't you just take it down a notch there?
Yeah.
I don't know if to invoke Albert Einstein and all this, but yeah, that's his theory, is that there has to be something else.
Yeah, we'll talk to Tom about that.
Excellent.
He's coming up a little bit later on.
And
we're also going to talk about guilty pleasures.
Ooh.
Yeah, because yesterday I watched, did you ever see the movie The Fury?
No.
Kirk Douglas, Andrew Stevens, Amy Irving.
Okay.
From 1978. Brian De Palma directed it.
Okay.
It's a magnificently ridiculous movie.
Okay.
And it's not good. It's
okay.
But it's awesome in that way.
Okay.
And so that's a guilty pleasure of mine. I love The Fury. And it's just, it is ridiculous from frame one till the ending.
Okay.
When John Cassavetes literally explodes on screen.
Oh, I'll have to take a look at that.
That's then. The final scene in the movie. John Cassavetes explodes.
All right. I'm trying
and,
to think.
And so it's a really just absurd, and Kirk Douglas is ridiculous in it, and it was shot here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't
know. And they shot it at Old Chicago. There's a scene that actually takes place at Old Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah. I barely.
So right there, it's they've preserved Old Chicago on film forever. So right there.
Right. You know. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long ago did Old Chicago close? Like in the
80s? Early
80s.
Early 80s, yeah.
I vaguely remember it. My dad.
Caitlin has no clue what we're talking about.
No. Well, no. She, and why would she? No.
But see, here's the thing, Caitlin. Old Chicago used to be this indoor amusement park that was surrounded by a really crappy mall.
Yeah.
I actually do know what you're talking about, but I've just never seen it.
She's in research. It's right up there with Riverview Park for her.
But, you know, Old Chicago had a special smell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just, and there were no anchor stores
right. In
the mall.
It was just like,
it was like t-shirt places where you can get iron-on decals on your, because that was big in the 70s.
Like a record shop or something.
A couple of record shops. And then you can get like popcorn. It was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It was in Bolingbrook, in the middle of Bolingbrook.
Yeah, I don't even know why my dad ever took me there. My dad used to take me to Kittyland, but mostly so he could go to Maywood and place a few bets.
Yeah, sure. We did that too, yeah. but no, my parents took me to Old Chicago all the time.
Oh, no.
We used to go all the time.
No, they always took me to Great America. And actually, we're going for Fright Fest the next week or so. That's a family. You have to have your family traditions. Do you go to Fright Fest?
No.
Are you a big roller coaster guy?
I used to be when I was a kid, but not anymore.
Yeah, I can't go in circles, by the way. Nothing that goes around in circles.
Yeah,
I can't.
I can barely walk up the steps anymore.
Please. So. That's Nick D coming up next. You've been listening pretty late.